We have 30 supervisors present. That is a quorum. I will call us to order and ask that those who are interested please stand and recite in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you all for coming out on a rather crisp, cold January evening. Unfortunately, our first agenda item is to ask that everyone present participate in a moment of silence. A former County Board Supervisor, Tom Hutchison, who was a member of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors from 1992 until 1998, passed away recently. Tom was a member of the Administrative Committee, Economic Development Committee, served on the CAP Board of Directors, served on Zoning and Land Information Committee, Human Services Board, Board of Public Health, pretty much served on all of the committees as we know them today, at least. And so if you would join with me in a moment of silence out of respect for former Supervisor Tom Hutchison. Thank you. Supervisors, I would draw your attention to a number of items that were in your packet and or I think a couple of them were placed at your desks for this evening's meeting. The work plan, do you want to talk about that, even though it's my report, Mr. O'Malley? I think so. Is that green sheet? No, the county board one. The Gantt chart.
Did that go out?
I don't know. We're looking for a Gantt chart. Do you have one on your desk? I apologize for not. No, not that count.
I've got one.
Let's come back to this while we're looking to see. I thought it went into the packet. Perhaps there was an error, and we'll have
like
to come
this.
Back.
Supervisors, do you have a document looks like this? We'll do it next month.
This will be a speedy meeting tonight. Look at that, how fast we're whipping through these things. My apologies for that. We will come back to that. I did want to take a couple of moments to ask supervisors to think about when you were first elected and started serving on the county board and what might have been helpful to you in terms of an orientation to being a county board supervisor, and jot those ideas down. If you're so inclined, you could certainly raise your hand and share them with us tonight. But we're trying to, in preparation for April and the orientation of what we know will be a number of new county board supervisors, make sure that we are planning an appropriate, thorough orientation for county board supervisors, and I would appreciate your input into that process. Anything that comes to mind right off the bat, either that we have done in the past that you think we need to continue doing, or something that we could improve on for the orientation for new county board supervisors? Don't all avoid eye contact with me. Supervisor Sobranek.
I think that we should employ the same dress code that the WCA has, which is dress or casual dress. I don't think any food or beverages should be allowed in the meeting room. The lunchroom is just right down the hall. And I don't think any electronic things be safe, because I see too many supervisors paging each other how to vote on things. So I don't think there should be electronic things in during the meeting also. Thank you.
Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. I believe I got on the board in 1992, and for 2 years, it took me 2 years, I went to every department, and I met the department head, and I visited all the different departments. And so that really helped me when I voted on different things, and if someone, you know, would do that, I think it would really help them on the board. That was a major, major help for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Benrud. Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I came on in 1990 also. The first thing I wanted was experience on the Finance and Personnel Board, which was the big committee which negotiated contracts, hired and fired, put the budget together and everything, and I was told by the then chairman he's not putting anybody on the first 2 years until that board member gets his feet on the ground to find out what the county board is all about. And that, I wasn't in agreement with him then, but I am now. You need to find out exactly how county government runs before you get on the big board. And that changed quite a bit. But yes, in the years gone by, we had lots of committees. Since we combined them, we don't have as many anymore, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out. I am not on that committee. I have an opinion, but now isn't the time to express it.
Thank you, Supervisor Bina. Again, on the orientation process that we use to help new supervisors understand their responsibilities. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Geography, like the name of this building, administration building versus the Health and Human Services building, especially when you start talking about the auditorium, which sometimes people refer to B190 as the auditorium. Also, the big news that most committee meetings happen in the same room on third floor. I don't know why I found that confusing, but I didn't really, know, let's see, which building I'm in and what floor and that kind of stuff. So
thank you.
A good map. And the parking, I remember when parking was more limited. We had a place where, you're allowed to park here and there. And then just the idea of getting that parking permit if you were going to be here during the day and those kinds of things. Okay.
Good suggestions all around. This is the beginning of this process, so as ideas occur to you, if you would pass them on through an email or a phone message or a note, that would be appreciated. Thank you for the input this evening. Hopefully this document you have, which is a purple stapled together couple of pages that has draft January 2012 on the top of it, public hearing procedures. Then there should be a page behind that that says draft public comments at committee meetings. And the third page says information meeting procedures. The hope is, I'll ask for Dave Lang's help in this perhaps, but in response to a request from a supervisor, the executive committee spent a little bit of time on this, and these drafts are exactly that, drafts of suggested procedures for three distinct situations for the county board, public hearings, and then the regular committee meetings and how public comment, that agenda item that we all have on our agendas, how that happens. And then the informational meeting, the example was the frac sand mining meeting that we had down in B190, Margaret, following our December meeting, perhaps, or November meeting. So these are drafts that we are circulating. If you have feedback, suggestions, edits, these are being discussed at executive committee, and we would value your input and edits, suggestions to these documents. Were they in your packet or were they on your desk? On the desk. Okay, so you're seeing them for the first time tonight. So spend some time with that and then forward your feedback, whatever that might be, to myself or members of the executive committee or Dave, if you don't like anybody on executive committee, I guess that would work. We're on a roll now. The review of travel policy. In case you weren't awake already, this one will wake you up, I'm sure. This is now, I think, a gray sheet of paper that says County Board Travel Policy Summary. I know, being relatively new in this position, that it was helpful for me to be reminded of what the ordinance, what our county ordinances say about travel procedures, expenses, how we claim them, and so forth. So I enlisted the very capable help of our county clerk, Ginny Dankmeyer, and Margaret Norden up in the chair's office, and Dolores from finance also helped. So they've spent quite a bit of time coming up with this summary, and then the checklist that's on the back, just as kind of a step-by-step guide to get you through what you need to do. I'm thinking this will be one of the items, for example, that would be part of that new supervisor orientation, that we would walk through this. I would also just remind supervisors that we had some budget problems at the end of the year last year. We had to move some monies around because we had overspent in some of our line items as a board. And so that was also part of what prompted this work. So I would ask you to take a look at this and remind yourself of what the procedures are. If you have questions, Ginny and Margaret are available to help with that. Let me stop there and see if anybody has any questions right off the bat. Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you. Under traveling together, if you give me a ride down there, does that mean I have to share a room with you?
It's a trick question.
I did that in jest because you and I have had this conversation. I just wanted
got it.
To throw that out there.
We'll be fighting for giving you a ride probably next time we all go somewhere. I'm thinking.
Touche.
So I hope you find this helpful. Again, I want to thank Ginny and Margaret and Dolores for helping with this. And I hope that you use it and remind yourself of those travel policies, please. I think it cannot get any more fun than it already is. So,
God, we're having a good time tonight.
With that, I will ask for one little Supervisor Hampson.
Yes, thank you.
One little.
The trip optimizer is available on County View, but we can't get that at home. We can only get it here. Correct?
I have no idea. It's only on County View.
Okay. Thanks.
Only Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. I find under expectations the one about halfway down, reimbursement not allowed for miles traveled to or from travelers' home to headquarters or while on personal business. Is that a change in policy to these meetings and such? I mean, I haven't claimed it anyway because I live close, but the way that reads it would be, at least as I read it, it would say you're not allowed to claim for travel to meetings here.
What they're referring to is if you leave your house and you come here first and then you leave on business, you can't claim the travel from your house to here first and then for travel.
Okay, for personal business.
For personal business, correct.
It maybe needs a little rewording there.
We'll make note of that.
That's just the kind of feedback we're looking for. Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to commend you and the committee to put this together. You've solved a lot of problems and eliminated a lot of questions, and I think you did a very good job on this. It's pretty self-explanatory, and I want to thank the committee for putting this together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Sobranek. This doesn't need to be a done deal. If you have other suggestions for improving the language, especially that helps clarify, we can certainly see that as a work in progress. Now to supervisor conference reports. Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. I just returned this afternoon from Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin County Highway Association meeting down there, and this is the first time that we met at Chula Vista. And everything was, they treated us very, very well. If there was any problems, they wanted to take care of right away because we have a 3-year contract with them for both January and June. Also, Leon Paff attended, Ron Chamberlain attended, and I coordinated and moderated sessions. We have many excellent, excellent speakers from the federal and state level. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Benrud. Supervisor Flood.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that we have an opportunity to nominate someone to fill in for the Wisconsin NACO director. I would love to see someone from this body apply and get that. The letter went out January 10th. There's an opening due to a resignation. It is to fill the unexpired term January to July, and WCA reimburses travel expenses, and it has to be back to the CA office by February 1st. And I think it would not only be good for us, I think it would be very good for the nation to have one of us on the national board. So please consider that tonight.
Thank you, Supervisor Flood, for those encouraging words. Supervisor Pedretti.
Not necessarily a conference report, but more of a pat on the back to our staff, or highlighting some of the great stuff our staff does. As you know, we did redistricting this fall. It didn't just end with that. As a town clerk, I speak from another standpoint. That redistricting affects the next election. And there are some town clerks out there who are pulling their hair out. I don't know if you saw the article in the paper that some of these redistricting lines didn't go so well. So I want to have hats off to our staff and the zoning department, the mapping people there. The Government Accountability Board even commented that we had one of the best counties for mapping in the state. So it certainly helps us as a town level and clerks, so it'll make our election run smoothly. So thank you to our staff.
Thank you, Supervisor Pedretti. Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. Yes, I attended the highway convention along with Arlene and Ron Chamberlain, and Keith Back was there with us too. I attended a lot of they were very informative meetings, and there's a lot going on with the County Highway Association. And there is every year. They don't expect too much help from the legislature. That's unfortunate, but and their biggest problems yet is still the amount of money that's being taken in because of the less we're using less fuel, and the gas tax is staying the same, and the price of fixing roads continues to rise. But one of the problems from that is that they done away with indexing 3-4 years ago, and that was unfortunate, but that's the way it is. And I just want to make it short. I want to congratulate our county commissioner, Ron Chamberlain. He ran for the election of the WCA secretary on the board, and he was defeated, but he represented us, La Crosse County, very well, and I encourage him to run again in a couple of years because he was well-received, and the person that won has been down there a long time. So, but I encourage him to run again. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Paff. Supervisor Mock.
All of you got a black and white version of this sheet, and it's to remind you of the discussion that's going to be done. Jack Norman on January 23rd is going to be here in our Health and Human Services building from 11:45 to 1. If you want to have a sack lunch, you can call the number that's on the right-hand bottom of your sheet. Let them know which of three sandwiches you want, or you can just show up and have your lunch afterwards. If you can't make it to that, and we are hoping you do, the topic is the privatization of government services and the impact on government and the community at large. Jack Norman is the Director of Public Research and Development for the Institute for Wisconsin's Future. And if you can't make it to the noon event, he's going to be around in the evening at UWL at Cartwright Center in Port-au-Call at 6:30. And I believe it's going to be a group of people discussing this topic. League of Women Voters at the national level is going to be studying this issue, and they will come up with their ideas about it after their study. So I think it would be a good idea for us to go to this if we can. So that's the reason I gave you each a copy. Thanks.
Thank you, Supervisor Mock. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last Friday night, I went to Centerville to the public hearing on CapEx 2020 and read our resolution number 76-12/11 regarding opposing and requesting additional information regarding CapEx 2020 and ATC applications for a 345 kV transmission line project. It was very well received, and I had many thank yous at the end of the meeting.
Thank you, Supervisor Wood, for doing that on our behalf. Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things, and first of all, following up on CapEx 2020, I'm sponsoring a public meeting on Monday, January 30th on that issue. Representatives from XL Energy and Dairyland Power will be there, along with, we've invited people from the DNR and the Department of Transportation, and also folks who are opposed to the transmission line. That will be at Holman High School on Monday, January 30th, if anyone is interested, starting at 6 o'clock till about 7:30. Second thing, those people who are going to the WCA Legislative Conference on February 7th and 8th, Representative Billings and I will be in our respective offices that day. I think mainly that afternoon is when people are encouraged to stop by. My office number is 146 North, and Jill's office number is 4 West. So we certainly look forward to seeing you.
Thank you for the invitation, Supervisor Doyle. Any other conference reports? Hearing none, Administrator O'Malley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Included in your packet is the update of the rolling two-year work plan that I summarized in two pages. Makes it real easy to zero in on particular priorities. Just to highlight a few things in particular, well, obviously this is not all-inclusive of everything that our department does and that I work on. Zeroing in particular, the new board will be wrestling with and looking at long-term major capital needs. Just to highlight, I do think it's important to note that the board will be going through quite a bit of transition next year with nine incumbents not running or returning to the board, and between 6 and 10 new supervisors actually joining the board. So the institutional memory of board members will be impacted, and we'll be needing to work with people to orient folks to the departments, to the orientation of county government. So anything you can do to help with that, particularly with new board members, we'll be looking for your help. It will be challenging. In addition to that, I talk about some of the impacts of the changes in collective bargaining and responsibilities between us and employees, strategic planning around large capital expenditures, continuing to pursue sustainability, and the other collaborative efforts that I'm involved in the community. If you have comments either tonight, or obviously we'll be touching on this during the retreat that we generally do following the new election, you also should have in your packet a two-page evaluation form. If you'd be kind enough to fill that out and submit that confidentially directly to the board chair. The board chair then summarizes that information, and we talk about it at the executive committee. Just a reminder, we also do this same form with department heads, so we gain their input as well. So either during this meeting or if you want to talk to me individually, that's always fine as well. But we do that annually to make sure that we're constantly asking for your input on where I'm spending my time and priorities and helping to guide the organization.
Is that it for you, Mr.
Yes.
O'Malley? Thank you. Corporation Council report, Dave.
This is on the agenda because there has been a development in the Jennings claim. A claim was filed in December by the parents of Brandon Jennings. I'm sure you're all familiar with why that claim was filed from the accident up on Old T and Highway 35. The case has been settled. WMIC can settle that case without consulting us because it's WMIC money for the most part. But the settlement occurred just recently. It settles all claims of the Jennings parents and the heirs and the estate of Brandon Jennings. Our amount that goes to that is our self-insured retention, which is $100,000. That's the most we have per claim. And the balance is paid by WMIC. I'm going to tell you that the total amount of the settlement was $525,153.75. What this means is that that case is basically done. They cannot make any claims in the future against the county or against Ms. Stratman personally. So this ends all claims against the county and also against Tricia Stratman. I can't tell you a lot about all the reasons because I wasn't the attorney handling it for WMIC, but I am privy to some of those discussions. But frankly, what it is it's a matter of evaluating the chances of success, looking at the cost of going forward, which would have been quite expensive, and looking at whether there's increased liability, other liability that could be possible. Based on all those, the case was settled. And I can tell you that the attorney who represented WMIC in this case, represented the county, Ray Pollan, is one of the better attorneys that I've been around handling these cases. So did a very thorough job, and that's what happened. So if there's any questions, but I wanted to make sure that you were informed of this development.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Cards and correspondence are noted on the bulletin board at the back of the room. I'm certain there are no committee meetings planning to be held because we're not planning a recess at this point. So that takes us to the consent agenda item 1-4, moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Sobranek. Discussion on the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Consent agenda is approved unanimously. We have an appointment. Supervisor Burke, if you would take the chair, please.
Chair Johnson.
Thank you. If you think you are experiencing deja vu, there's a reason for that. This appointment was made in December, but we had an incorrect date for the expiration of the term, so it's coming back again to clarify the appointment of Thomas N. Thompson to the Board of Adjustment as first alternate for a two-year term to expire December 31st, 2013. I move its approval.
Chair Johnson has moved the approval to appoint Thomas N. Thompson to the Board of Adjustment as a first alternate for a two-year term to expire December 31st, 2013. Is there a second to that motion? Motion second by Supervisor Wood. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is carried.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke. On to Planning, Resources, and Development Committee, Supervisor Don Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have item 1-6, second consideration of Ordinance Number 90 to repeal and create Chapter 17 entitled Zoning Code of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin. I'd like to put that on the floor for voting, and I'd like to retain the floor for a minute.
Supervisor Meyer moves Ordinance 90, recreating Chapter 17. This would be its second reading. That's been seconded by Supervisor Pedretti. Back to you, Supervisor Meyer.
There are a few housekeeping items that we have to go over on that, and Nate Thompson will come in and do that.
Sampson.
Good evening. There were some minor changes, some clarifications that were required in the ordinance. We did a review, and during the course of our multiple revisions, we came upon a number of items that didn't refer to correct section citations or references within the ordinance, and also one definition. There was an appendix removed in one of the ordinance drafts that was reviewed by the committee, and that was an animal unit calculator that was placed in the appendix of the ordinance. That was removed, and a definition proposed in that second reading here that would more accurately describe the definition of an animal unit and how it relates to administrative code. The other sections are simply numeration corrections, and I'd entertain any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Sampson?
That's it.
Supervisor Meyer.
That's it? Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'll call for a vote for approval.
Discussion.
Of this.
So now discussion on the ordinance. Supervisor Pedretti.
I would make a motion to adopt the proposed zoning ordinance rewrite amendments. I'm assuming we need to amend that with a motion.
Correct. So Supervisor Pedretti is moving approval of the amendments as outlined by Mr. Sampson was in our packet, seconded by Supervisor Plesha. So discussion on those amendments. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Those amendments are approved. So now discussion on the amended ordinance. All those in favor, Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of comments to make prior to us voting on this. I guess during the course of the last 2 years, we've been pretty busy at working at this. We've been amending it, and we've been doing a lot of things, including public hearings and everything. There are a number of things I still have a little problem with. I did ask about 6 to 8 months ago for the idea that we should know prior to approval what the fees are going to be and how much they're going to be. I realize at the end of this ordinance, and I read it through about 6 or 8 times already, it says that the county board shall approve the fees at some point in time. It would be nice to know exactly what those fees are prior to us approving this ordinance. What are the fees? I project there's going to be a lot more conditional use in the ordinance than what we had in the past, and the fees I would project are going to be looking at maybe $250,000, but that's just my opinion. I'm not going to ask for any answers to my questions, but I'm raising the questions for the board members here. I would like to see, we had an old ordinance, we got the new ordinance. They get incorporated together. A lot of the old ordinance, which we've been working with for the last X number of years, and the first 2 years I was on the county board in 90 to 92, Ray Palachek was the administrator, and we used the old ordinance. Now we revised it a number of times, and now we're putting a brand new one in. I'd like to see some dates set in on the old rules and also the new rules. Because when we have an appeal by a person from out county, either a farmer or a urbanite living in the rural part of the county, we can't tell when that rule went into effect. And that becomes a problem in my mind because we are not considering the rule as of now. We're going all the way back into history whenever the ordinances started, and there are dates for everything, and they should be in. I think anything that was in the county, such as buildings, roads, whatever, prior to our ordinance should be grandfathered in, and we don't have that there now. I tried to present an amendment a month ago, and you instructed me, Madam Chair, that I should talk to staff. I spent an hour and a half talking to the staff in the last couple of weeks, and I didn't get any place with getting my proposal in, and all I was asking for was a grandfather clause for those structures. structures and things that were here prior to the rules being put into place, and it just makes sense to me. There's another problem, and item number three I have. The square feet of buildings on farmland that is used to, that used to be a farm, and the farmers retired and sold work land and currently live in the house. And these buildings are now illegal, and the staff is asking them to be torn down and or get a variance for those they don't tear down. A lot of these buildings were there 50, 60, 70 years ago, and now those buildings are the ones that should be grandfathered in. Because there are a lot of buildings that were in place before the ordinance got put into place.
Supervisor Bina, can I just stop you for a second? Those are four items. Do you have more on your list?
I've got...
Because I think even though you said you didn't want an answer... I think other supervisors would like to hear an answer.
Okay.
So,
well, okay.
Do you want to finish through?
Keep track of my question, and
I'm keeping track.
Fill you in on it again as we conclude here. Temporary storage structures, there are probably 100 of those in the county now. They're used for storage of materials, products that are, and in some cases, they're products to be resold to the public. One of my neighbors down the road from me has 8 or 9 temporary structures. I think the rules call for that to be licensed or permitted. I don't think we do that now, but you can tell me if I'm wrong on that because we haven't been involved too much in that. Item number 5, the big issue that farmers in the out county are having a problem with is that we are more restrictive than the state rules on 200 animal units on a farm. We have 220 people who signed a petition saying that they don't want the 200 animal units. When a farmer is hit with, or when someone puts in a complaint or the staff finds out he's over 200 animal units, he is determined to be out of compliance, and that person has to go to get a private consultant to put a plan together because we do not work with him very much except in a supervisory capacity. That dollar figure to come into compliance is between $6,000 and $10,000. And farmers maybe have good corn prices and milk prices now, but they haven't got that kind of money laying around. And so the item number 6, there are a lot of issues that are in this ordinance that need a conditional use permit, and I would probably say, you know, I think in the last week I probably had 8 telephone calls from people wanting to know about the ordinance. They're just looking at it now. And it's way too late. We went through the whole system, but I guess we haven't got many alternatives, but I guess it looks to me like I probably will vote against the ordinance because there are too many ifs, and it's having too big of an effect on the farming community and out county, and so I don't plan on voting for it as of right now. Thank you.
I originally thought that there might be others who wanted answers to those questions. I perhaps was wrong about that. You said right off the bat you didn't want the answers.
Nobody wants to. I just leave it there.
Okay.
Those are
okay.
My comments.
Next, I have Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd like to offer an amendment to Section 17085F, and Nate, I can't find it on the, do you have the page that people could look at?
Yes.
And anyway, it has to do with a building that would not need a permit would be up to 100 square feet. I would like to amend that to 144 square feet. And if it gets a second, I'd like to retain the floor.
It's toward the bottom of page 36.
So bottom of page 36, section 17.08. Pardon?
We are missing some page numbers.
Some people's copies are missing some pages.
This is the January 3rd.
Remember, our practice is that you get the full copy of the ordinance at its first reading, which was last month, and what you got tonight was the summary page. So is it online that people could look at it?
This was my edition, was online.
You got 36, right?
Yep. See, I don't think it goes that far.
So will you just read your...
Yeah. Anyway, I could ask Nate to read it because he has the... I just have the addendum. Nate, would you be so kind as to read that section?
The section of that.
Yeah, and then substitute the 144 for the 100. And if it gets a second, I'll have to retain the floor.
It's under the section issuing zoning and occupancy permits, and it states a zoning occupancy permit is not required for accessory buildings 100 square feet or less. All lots and accessory buildings shall meet the requirements as specified in the table in section 17.14, parent 1.
So Supervisor Ebert's motion is to amend the numeral 100 to 144. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Feehan. Discussion on the amendment. Supervisor Ebert, you keep the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this I think this failed in committee on a 3-3 vote. On a straw poll given at the town unit meeting in Maryland, I believe that was 7-4-3 against. Does that ring a bell to you?
At one of them.
Okay, at the most recent one? At the most recent one? Thank you. And one of the reasons when we build, we normally build in 4-foot sections to get the most efficiency, the majority of the plywood comes in 4x8 and that type of thing. So I think it's more efficient. What this is for is the people in the outlying areas, a lot of them just have 2-car garages. Well, nowadays, everyone has 2 cars. Our lots are a little larger out in the townships. We have riding lawnmowers, snow blowers, and all that type of thing to store bicycles in the wintertime so that everyone can get their cars in. And I just think that the 10x10 is not large enough to put that to put all those things in, again, so we can put our cars in the garages and have happy wives and husbands. Thank you.
Happiness, that's this ordinance, this amendment is going to affect, is happiness.
I'm all about happiness,
okay,
Madam Chair.
You heard it here first, folks. Discussion on the amendment. Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. Supervisor Ebert and I have had many a discussions on this, and thank you. We did vote on it at committee level. We've discussed it multiple times. The town of Holland has weighed in on it. Our view is that anything that large should have a permit for safety reasons, for the assessor to pick it up on the assessment roll, because otherwise it doesn't get picked up. It currently is 64 in the current?
Really isn't a limitation. That was proposed initially was 64.
Okay. It was originally 64. So yes. The committee understood that, 64 might have been a little small. We compromised at 100 square feet. When you asked about the vote, we had a vote earlier in the process, probably a year into the process, and the towns were happy with that. So I would vote against such an amendment and keep it as is. Thank you.
Other discussion on the amendment. I'm saying this out loud so the clerk knows this as well. We'll be taking votes on the computer on all amendments and ordinances for zoning and the next agenda item that's coming. So make sure you're at the ready with your mouses. Or mice? What is it? Okay, any other discussion on the amendment? On the computer, on the amendment. So it's up on the screen here, section F, the proposed amendment would read, a zoning/occupancy permit is not required for accessory buildings 144 square feet or less. If you are in favor of the amendment, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Yes for 144, no for keeping it 100. That amendment fails on a vote of 15 to 16. Welcome to the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. Discussion on the amended ordinance.
No, we didn't do that yet.
Pardon? Supervisor Geary.
Supervisor Bina brought something up about a $6,000 to $10,000 cost. Somebody elaborate on that. I didn't quite get a
so
full understanding of what that was.
Mr. Sampson, if you can address the issue of the county ordinance being more restrictive than the state on 200 animal units or greater?
Yes, Madam Chair. That's a requirement under DADCAP 51, the livestock facility siting. Anytime there's a new facility proposed or one that expands beyond a certain number, and usually under state code that number is 500, you have to have a completed ADCAP 51 application that satisfies all of the requirements relating to nutrient management, all of those things. And in La Crosse County, when the ordinance was adopted initially to include, address those expansions, the number was 200 animal units. And at that time, it was decided by the Board of Supervisors to retain that 200 animal unit number. Now, there's been considerable debate through the ordinance revision process whether to change that also, and I believe at the last committee meeting, that was a 3-3 vote also.
That wasn't my question. I thought he made a comment about something was going to cost them an additional $6,000 to $10,000.
And what he was referring to were engineering, probably engineering costs, because they would have to hire a consultant to complete that. The cost of that, I'm not aware of it. I can't quote that exact cost. The county's application fee is $1,000, and that's shared equally between the land conservation departments and the zoning departments.
Supervisor Paff.
Just to follow up on that, I would like to know how, in the surrounding counties, or if you could tell me also, how many counties in Wisconsin have such a low limit as 200?
I can't answer that number, Supervisor Paff.
Do you think is there any in the surrounding area that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm quite sure there isn't any in Wisconsin. That's why I'm asking the question. So La Crosse is being quite prohibitive on the animal units, and that was passed in about 5 years ago, if I remember, that we went from the 500 to the 200. And at that time, I know the rural residents were quite upset with it, but there was, I believe there was only two of us, Mr. Bina and I, that voted against it when it was brought in at the time. But it has caused some problems with a lot of these expansions because they're looking at La Crosse County as they don't want animal units. And that's, you know, we're all part of La Crosse County.
Supervisor Mock.
One of the reasons we discussed this to be thinking about staying at 200 is that a lot of the land in La Crosse County is hilly and more scenic, and it's not just straight flat land. And so having as many as 500 animal units is a lot of animal units sometimes on the lay of the land as we have it here. And that's why the feeling is that on average 500 might work, but we need to look at the county we have and the terrain and take that into consideration. And that's why those of us who voted to stay with 200 probably voted the way we did.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify why the figure that I used In the case of a person having more than 200 animal units, there is a $1,000 fine. There is a $1,000 conditional use permit that
needs... Did you mean fee?
There's a fee for $1,000 that needs to be for the conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. The person who is exceeding the 200 animal units needs to go to the outside to hire a consultant. And in one case, the first consultant that was contacted in Madison was $8,900 for putting a plan together for nutrient management and conservation plan for that farm. He went to Buffalo County and he found a person who will do the same thing for $5,900. So $5,900 plus $2,000 is almost $8,000, and that's where that field comes from.
Thank you for the clarification, Supervisor Pedretti.
If I could ask staff, either Nate or Charlie, how many expansions have we had in the last 10 years?
I think we're working on our third right now, or third or fourth.
Okay. And again, as Supervisor Mock mentioned, we have a different terrain here, very hilly. Erosion is a problem. Our land conservation office really impressed on us that this was an important number to keep, because once we change it to 500, we can't go back. And I think this is a safety issue for neighbors. Anybody, this is about expansion. If you're going to expand your herd, that's what this is about. If you're going to expand your herd and put 200 more animal units on a property, I think your neighbors have a right to know. They have a right to know that the land is going to be used in the right way, that there's nutrient, that there's drainage, that everything's been looked at. I think as few as we've had, the last one we had was Hansen over in Bangor. He actually did it like three times in the last year because he kept changing the plan.
Correct.
And he didn't seem to have a problem paying that fee. If it's just about a fee versus safety, I don't understand, you know, why we would want to change it at this point. So I don't think there's an amendment on the floor or anything. I think it's just for discussion purposes at this point. But that's why our committee voted the way, at least that's how I voted that way. So thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Just a brief follow-up to Ms. Pedretti's question. Those three or four expansions, were they within the 200 to 500 amount, or were they over 500? In other words, would they have been covered by this, or would they have been under it, or over it anyway? Do you know?
The first the county acted on was over. The second two were under.
Okay.
Yep.
So two in the last how many years?
Three in the last. Well, actually, the second two were the same person. He expanded beyond and then expanded beyond that threshold that he originally planned. So.
But both those were both of his were between the 200 and 500?
Correct.
Amount. Okay.
Yep, and that was in the past 5 years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Weers.
Thank you. I'm one of the people who voted for the 500 because I believe that our landscape is different, but the state has 500 because that's a compromise of way up north and, you know, perfect flat Dane County or wherever that, and I think we should be a compromise at 500. So I would offer an amendment. Sorry, Ginny, for the late. I thought someone else was going to change on page 27 of the zoning code under B expansion number one, 200 to 500 animal units.
So an amendment has been offered by Supervisor Weers to change the number 200 to 500 in section
B1.
B1 of?
Of page 27 on the zoning code, chapter 17, number 11.
Section 11?
11.
B. The number 200.
This might be the old one because I'm online looking at it. Sorry.
That's all right.
We're
going to get it up on the computer here.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I've got the online version here, so. Light industrial, we've got to go back to.
What's the section? What
number? Can I make one comment?
Are you going to help clarify the amendment?
Then
hold off for a second, please. Let's just make sure we get the right section so we're voting appropriately, and then I will be happy to give you the floor, Mr. Handy.
On the online edition, it is page 23, probably a quarter of the way
right, but
down.
What sec? So it's, I know that it's G2B, but what's before that? So it's
17.05
parent G2B. And the amendment is to...
Three.
I'm sorry. It's A. I apologize. Instead of 200 animal units, it would read 500 animal units. Am I in the right spot? 17.05 parent G 2A. Is there a second to wherever we think that is? Seconded by Supervisor Bina. What's up here? Discussion on the amendment. Let me just hear from Mr. Handy to clarify something.
Yeah, there are other counties in the state that do have more strict provisions than the state. We're not the only one, if that, you know, if that helps. I don't know the number of counties offhand, but there are more that are more restrictive.
So I just want to clarify, this is 17.05 parent 5,
correct,
parent G, 2A, changing it from 200 to 500. Discussion on that amendment. Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, just briefly, and I don't serve on this committee, and I certainly live in the city of La Crosse and don't pretend to be an expert on agriculture, but La Crosse County is a unique county, and we shouldn't decide how we're going to do things based upon what happens in other parts of the state of Wisconsin. This is an immense amendment of immense magnitude. It shouldn't be done at the last minute on the floor where we more than double the size of herds that are going to be allowed and the terrible damage it could do to our environment. It should be voted down quickly and almost unanimously.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you. John, you surprised me, but I guess this has been a hotter issue all the time in our county, only because there are small farmers going out of business. The large farmers are getting larger and larger, and they're interested in the workland more than they are animals. And I guess there are about two other counties in the state of Wisconsin that do have something stricter than 500 animal units. But what's happened is that we had 220 petitions. When they were brought to the board, our chairman asked if they were legal and everything, and Dave Lang said he hasn't looked at them. We never quite got a copy of those 200. They were available, I guess, in the office, and I didn't go look at them, but there's no doubt in my mind that there could have been 400 to 500 if the time limit for circulating them would have been a little bit longer. There are farmers that are expanding. They are taking care of their land. 200 animals in a lot in a farm, and the farms, I said, are getting bigger. It's too costly for the farmers. They don't make that much money out there, and we went through a lot of bad years. We had guys going bankrupt in the 70s and 80s, and we just can't afford to pay that much money out of the farmer's pocket. And if there's any problem conservation-wise, our staff, and I've been on the Land Conservation Committee for 22 years now, our staff will be out there and correcting the problem and forcing that farmer to do what it takes in order to not have erosion going on. So I would hope that you at least listen to the farmers here, because there is scuttlebutt flying around out there, and there are towns talking about, and I don't want to see it either, about the possibility of getting out of the zoning of La Crosse County. And if that happens, we are not going to have a continuous system out here.
On the amendment, Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel this way about many issues. La Crosse County doesn't ask what other counties are doing. Other counties ask what La Crosse County is doing. And I move to close debate.
There were no hands up, just so, oh, there was one more supervisor wishing to be heard. I'm going to ask that we hear from Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, Supervisor Hampson. I think one of the charges that we have as county board supervisors is to be good stewards of the land. And I don't read this ordinance as prohibiting having more than 200 animal units. I think it just requires a permit to do that. And I think that is a reasonable thing to request. And I'll be voting to keep it at 200. Thank you.
Remember, we're on the computer on this amendment. So this is 17.05, parent G, parent 2, parent A, changing it from 200 to 500. On the computer, if you are in favor of changing it to 500, no if you are opposed. That amendment fails on a 7-23-1 vote. Any other discussion on the amended zoning ordinance, the amendments that were approved initially, the clarification cleanup amendments that were made? On the amended ordinance, on the computer, if you are in favor of the amended zoning ordinance, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. The amended zoning ordinance is approved on a 27-4 vote. Supervisor Meyer, back to you.
Moving right along. Item 1-7, we have first consideration of ordinance number 94 to create chapter 33 entitled Regulation of Outdoor Advertising of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin. I need a second.
Supervisor,
I move for approval.
Moves the first reading of ordinance number 94 to create chapter 33, seconded by Supervisor Pedretti. I would like to remind my colleagues of what happened on the zoning ordinance just moments ago and encourage that if you have amendments, they be offered this evening at the first reading, if possible. It is clearly in our county board ordinances that at its first reading, amendments may be offered and debated, so we don't get ourselves in a time crunch a month from now when the moratorium will be ending. So any discussion at this first reading of the outdoor advertising ordinance? Supervisor Meyer, you still have the floor.
I'd like to have Charlie Handy come in. And we want to talk about some unintended consequences of the way the ordinance was written. And Charlie will explain those.
Mr. Handy.
Thank you. At the PRD committee meeting on the 3rd of January, I believe, 9th? Okay. Thank you. On the 9th of January, 3rd? Okay. Whatever. It doesn't really matter. The January meeting of the Planning, Resource, and Development Committee. A couple of significant changes were made to the ordinance as adopted by the committee. Those changes included adding the corridor of Highway 53 going north from 157 up to the interchange where it goes to Tremplo as a freeway or Class 4 highway. The unintended consequence of that is it added a number of interchanges then to the areas that were included in the definition of fronting on an interstate. And so one of the recommended changes to fix that
unintended consequence, if you will, is to remove the 2,500 feet adjacent to on the interchanges and just basically define fronting on an interstate as properties that are adjacent. And in looking at those interchanges, there's a significant amount of right-of-way that the DOT owns that would be considered adjacent to those Class 4 highways. And so this seems to be a significant improvement on the drafting of the language that has the 2,500 lineal feet. And, in fact, we do have a couple of emails from the sign companies that they don't have concerns with that change. The second, if anybody has questions.
Let's stop with that one.
Let's
take
on
this
that.
One at a time, please.
Okay.
Marilyn Pedretti will put the amendment on the floor.
Supervisor Pedretti.
Okay. I make a motion to amend 33.0217 to read, fronting on a Class 4 highway, period, any parcel which is adjacent to a Class 4 highway, period, deleting the rest of the sentence.
So just for clarification, these next couple of amendments should be in writing on a piece of paper at your desk. So Supervisor Pedretti has read that first one. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Weers.
Point of information.
Supervisor Spiker has a point of information.
How can we amend something that's not on the floor? There's been no motion. There's been no motion to approve.
Supervisor Meyer moved it and Pedretti seconded it at the beginning of this discussion, and then I made the comment about making amendments now.
Okay. My mistake.
That's fine. Thank you for keeping me on my toes.
So
discussion on the amendment to 33.02 parent 17. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment is approved.
Charlie, you want to go to the next one?
I'm going
to
jump down to the bottom one first. 3304 parent 9, parent B, parent 3. It says in that paragraph may not be located within 300 feet of an RPA district line. That's what it currently says. That's referring to an electronic message unit, an on-premise electronic message unit. That's what it's referring to. However, in researching the ordinance after this change was made, on-premise message units are allowed in the agricultural district. So they'd be allowed in the agricultural district, but not 300 feet from the agricultural district. So here, but, you know, a gap. And so what this amendment is attempting to do is to fix that discrepancy in the ordinance and remove the A from the RPA district line and just say from the residential and public districts. Again, we have an email from the sign companies that they're comfortable with this amendment.
Supervisor Pedretti.
I make a motion to amend section 33.049, paragraph B, 3, to read, may not be located within 300 feet of a residential or public district line.
Seconded by Supervisor Weers. Discussion on this amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment is approved unanimously. Back to you, Mr. Meyer.
33.04, Charlie.
The committee made an approval of a significant change to the allowed height of signs, which previously there was a buffer distance. They could be 10 feet, 12 feet, then up to 20 feet at, I think it was 350 feet. Was changed to allow it to be 20 feet at the line. And when a sign is higher, then the potential for the sign to be larger grows, obviously. If it's taller, you can build a bigger sign. In this section, 3304, parent 5, parent A, it does not allow signs greater than 100 square feet within 300 feet of that boundary if they're lit and 100 feet if they're unlit. The thought process was the unintended consequence was we'd have bigger signs closer. And so the proposal here is to reduce the 100 square feet down to 32 square feet. We do not have an email supporting this. In fact, the emails that we got from the sign companies were opposed to this 32 square feet. And so your debate really here on this amendment, if you want to debate it, is what should that number be? Should it stay at 100, which is how it's currently drafted? Should it go down to 32 here as it's opposed, or something different?
Supervisor Pedretti.
at this point, I'm going to make the motion to amend 3304, parent 5, parent A. Do I have to read the whole thing? Is that
yes,
best?
Please.
Okay. To read, signs facing a residential district, period. Any sign greater than 32 square feet per side shall not be allowed to face an RPA district within 100 feet of such district boundary for non-illuminated signs and within 300 feet of such district boundary if the sign is an illuminated sign, and I'd like to hold the floor.
Second.
Is there seconded by Supervisor Meyer? Back to you, Supervisor Pedretti.
We met with staff a little bit to talk about some of these unintended consequences, and looking at Section 3304, that whole section, all the signs, I shouldn't say all, a majority of the signs in there, except I think like campaign signs or something or other, are 32 square feet. So that's where we came up with that number. It seems like a reasonable number to put that close to another district. I think that we've worked very hard on this sign ordinance. There were some things that came in last minute. I don't think anybody intends for having a 100-square-foot sign sitting on somebody's property line. So that is why I'm offering this amendment and why I think it should be supported.
Discussion on the amendment. Supervisor Sobranek.
Just for clarification, could you give us something in this room that would equal about 32 square feet?
I thought about that. Jerry, a 32 square foot is a sheet of plywood. 4x8 sheet of plywood is 32 square feet. 100 square feet, 10x10, 5x20, something like that. So.
No,
that's longer,
not big.
Yeah.
Discussion on the amendment. Supervisor Mettinger.
Question for Mr. Handy. Do you know what the City of La Crosse has a sign ordinance that they took a long time to put together? And do you know what they say in there on this issue?
I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 300 feet, when you look at it, that's a football field. I've got season tickets for the Badgers, and I sit right on the end the sidelines on the end zone. And if you look to the other side, that sign is a whole lot bigger than 100 square feet, and it's difficult to see. You see a sign. You can't read the sign, though. I think that's going a little bit too far. 100 square feet when you're talking about, and you're talking about a radius of a lit sign of 300 feet. So a radius of 600 feet, if you put the dot and pull the string around there and all that, you're not going to find land like that that's going to permit that kind of a sign. I think, and I want to thank the PRD committee for all the work that they've done on this, and I think they came to some good rational decisions when they had time to debate it. And as colleague Supervisor Mettinger agrees, throwing these things out at the last minute, I think can do it an injustice. I think they were hashed over, discussed, debated, and dissected and everything else. I'd like to see it left at 100. Like I say, 32 square feet of 4x8 sheet of plywood at the other end of the football field. You may see that, but you wouldn't be able to obviously make out anything on it. And if it would be a totally ineffective sign. So I'll be voting against this amendment.
Supervisor Wood.
Just for information, what is the height here if we're talking
20 feet?
20 feet high. Okay. I did attend the public hearing at the Omni Center where a great number of citizens were actually asking for more stringent than we were even looking at. Given the adjustments we have made on the sign company's amendments, I think this one reflects that we did listen to the public hearing, and the 32 square feet would flow from those comments that we heard that night. I will be supporting this.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. What you have to look at is the detail of this particular piece of the legislation. And what we're talking about here is signs facing a residential district. So anything that is facing a residential district within 100 feet is that's not too terribly big a distance. And it's a significantly different situation from when you're at a sports venue where the expectation is that there will be large signs and that they be made visible for reading because you want to read the score. Most of the people that are there have chosen to be there. Whereas if you're talking about a residential district, you have to take into consideration the people who have lived there and want to continue to live there in peace. And so at a distance of 100 feet, I think 32 is a very adequate size, and especially when it's lighted. So I will support the amendment.
Just a word of caution to people. Can you please make sure you're speaking directly into the microphones? The sound system's having a hard time picking folks up. You're fine. Just if you can pay special attention to that, please. Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think in terms of football fields either. I think more in terms of blocks away and distances away. And 300 feet is less than a common city block. So what you have to do is to imagine what the sign would be like if it were facing your house. And it is facing. It's not radius like Supervisor Ferry said, because it could only be facing one direction. It wouldn't matter what's on the other side. And we haven't really, the PRD committee didn't really hash over and debate this issue. This was something that came very quickly. I would say that if it really had debated it, then the hole that was created by removing the height restrictions and the sliding scale wouldn't have been left there. Something would have been done to plug it up. So the hole here, let me explain to you what it means. It means that if the sign is less than 100 square feet, if it's 99 square feet, that the sign could be up to 20 feet and it could be 10 feet away from your property line. That's the effect of this hole here. Now, if we adopt the amendment and make it 32 square feet, which is like an 8x4 sign, then the sign could be 20 feet tall because we removed all the height stuff, and it could be within 5 feet of your residential line or your public facilities line. And I would ask Mr. Handy to agree that is accurate.
The setback for less than 64 square feet is 5, and greater than 64 square feet is 10.
Right. So that's what happened by not taking care of the next step after eliminating the height. Thank you.
Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I speak against the amendment. For the same reasons that Supervisor Ferries mentioned, which is that it's overly restrictive. And I was there the night of the public hearing, and Cordell's service station off the main road in Holman, Mr. Cordell was there to speak about the potential impact of this proposed ordinance on his business. And for anybody who's driven through Holman, they'll realize that his business is right across the street from a residential area. So obviously, that entire west side of the main street there is a area of business development that is close to a residential area. There was also a comment from Quick Trip about the residential area that is kitty corner from their store off of OT. So 300 feet is a very long distance. That will make many signs in the county non-compliant with this ordinance, and it would prohibit those types of signs from being built in the future. So I will vote against this amendment.
Can I correct something? The Cordell's facility is in the village of Holman. This ordinance is not in effect in the village of Holman. So as an example, that's an example, but make sure everybody knows this ordinance is not in effect in any of the incorporated areas of the county or in any town that adopts their own sign ordinance, whether it's more or less restrictive.
So that's a good point of clarification, Charlie, because this ordinance will only apply in areas that cities or townships that don't have their own sign.
But it would not apply in a city. The
board is not in order, Madam Chair.
Keep talking, please.
I have the floor, right?
Yep.
Those signs would not comply with this ordinance, isn't that correct? If that was the governing ordinance, if the city did not have an ordinance, these signs would not comply.
I did not research Cordell sign because it's not under our jurisdiction, so I can't answer that question.
Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
I have a question. The series of amendments that we've been voting on, and including this one, what's the origin of them? Did the committee vote on these, or is this individual members of the committee? Can somebody give me that background?
Supervisor Meyer.
Yes, Mr. Doyle. The committee did not vote on them, but we met because it was an unintended consequences, and we thought it could be cleaned up tonight at the first reading so that it didn't come up later on. And Maureen, Marilyn Pedretti, myself, Charlie Handy, and Dave Lang were there to put these together.
Okay, thank you.
That's it? You just had that question? Supervisor Karen Johnson.
Yeah, I just had a question in reference to Supervisor Friedland's comment. I heard 5 feet and 10 feet. How does that apply to the 100 feet and 300 feet? I'm just trying to get my numbers right.
Charlie, can you answer that one?
Sure. The 100 feet setback is currently as drafted for any sign that's larger than 100 square feet, and it's not lit. The 300 foot setback is for a sign greater than 100 square feet and is lit. The 5 foot setback is for any sign less than 64 square feet. The 10 foot setback is for any sign greater than 64 square feet.
Thank you.
Supervisor Pedretti.
I guess I wanted to help clarify that too. I mean, you could have a 99 square foot sign, 20 feet on a pole, 10 feet away from a house. That wasn't the intention when our committee voted on this, and I think that's why we thought this was a cleanup. Also, Quick Trip, when we were working on all these, they were fine with a sign that we went from 16 square feet to 24, and they were fine with that. So I think 32 is even a little bit bigger, and that should – I'm not understanding why that would be a problem. And to use Cordell's, Cordell's a friend of mine. He's a great guy, but I've actually gotten complaints from residents who don't like it in their window. They're afraid to say anything. So, take it with a grain of salt when you think that's a great sign. You have to remember that these signs are going to be lit, and they can be in somebody's window. And I think our committee was really careful about the residential aspect. That's why we want these regulations, not to strangle the sign companies, but to help the residents who live near these signs to know that there are some safeguards, and I think we heard that again and again at the public hearing. So I would support this resolution. Thank you.
On the amendment, Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I being a former business owner and stuff, a 32-foot sign is really small and very difficult to read. I think the other thing we might lose track of is that I think you're going to see a lot of townships write their own. I believe the chair of the committee has received a letter from Hamilton that they voted to write their own. I believe Campbell has their own already. Holland has their own. I've been led to believe that Shelby is going to write their own. I think that a lot of this, and we're going to end up with a patchwork of a very difficult, for business or whatever to know where they are and what they're doing. And I think this is coming because some of the folks in the out county feel that maybe these are a little more restrictive than they need to be. So I'll be voting against the amendment.
So this will be on the computer, on the amendment, 33.04 parent 5 parent A, changing the numeral 100 to 32 on the computer. If you are in favor of 32, vote yes. If you are in favor of
If you are not in favor of 32, vote no. That amendment passes on a vote of 18 aye, 13 no. Other discussion at this first reading of the outdoor advertising ordinance. Supervisor Geary.
Thank you. I'm on this spreadsheet thing. I want Charlie to explain the last two rows about the repairs of the signs. If a sign would due to wind damage, something get totaled out, how do you repair 50% of it? On the spreadsheet, the bottom two rows,
this isn't from us.
Oh, okay. But anyway, is this accurate? How would you, it says you could only repair up to 50% of the sign's value, but due to storm damage or something, if
it's damaged,
totaled out, let's say. How do they repair it, just from the practical standpoint?
That's not accurate.
That's not accurate on here?
The existing non-conforming standard in the ordinance is on...
this on our desk.
Page 7 of the 1912 draft. Legal non-conforming signs, parent 7. I guess you turn to the next page. It's still under parent 7. Parent E, parent 1. If said sign is damaged or structure altered, except for normal maintenance repair, the sign shall be reconstructed and used as before the damage. If this reconstruction happens within 3 months of such damage or alteration, provided the cost to reconstruct the sign is 50% or less of its fair market value per event. So the fair market value is going to be the assessed fair market value. So we'll have that record based on the tax assessor's assessing of the value of the sign.
Yeah, but if the sign is totaled, how do they replace it or whatever? If I thought earlier you said as long as they replace it with the same thing, if the wood sign they had to put up a wood one, or if the metal one you had to put up a metal one, or if it stays the same and it was damaged in a storm and was totaled out or whatever, how do they replace it?
They could replace it to be in compliance with the ordinance.
How do they do that?
It depends on where the sign falls in non-compliance. If the sign is in non-compliance because of a setback, so it's too close to, let's say the setback from another sign, it's too close to another sign. Okay, if they build it so that it is that required distance from the next sign, then it comes into compliance. Some signs might be in non-compliance for a number of different reasons. They'd have to come into compliance for all of those reasons that they don't comply with this ordinance.
Okay. Most of it would probably be in compliance because of location near a residential area or something?
Setback, location, size.
You mean if they rebuild it, they would have to build it smaller?
Possibly. That is the concept of legal nonconforming, is to provide over time, as things get maintained, damaged, rebuilt, updated, upgraded, that they come into compliance with the ordinance as it's currently adopted. That is the concept of legal nonconforming status, that they don't have to make those investments as of the date of the ordinance, but over time.
Did that answer your question, Mr. Carey? Other discussion? Supervisor Ebert.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment to 3301, which is the very first page, under number two, findings. I would like to add a parent D, which would read, Signs are an invaluable marketing tool for businesses and organizations, as well as a vital component of wayfinding for residents and visitors alike.
Is this written somewhere that we have it on our desks?
Okay.
That's fine. I just didn't know if we should be directing people to that. So moved by Supervisor Ebert, seconded by Supervisor Feehan to amend parent 3.01 parent 2 to add a section D that reads...
She just took it.
Signs are an invaluable marketing tool for businesses and organizations, as well as a vital component of wayfinding for residents and visitors alike. Seconded by Supervisor Feehan. Discussion on the amendment.
Yeah.
You still have the floor, Mr. Ebert.
Thank you. I just thought that we had all these other findings, and I thought that there's, you know, that seemed quite negative signs, and I think signs do serve a purpose, and I think that this ordinance should certainly note that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other discussion on the amendment? All the Supervisor Burke.
Madam Chair, would you just read it one more time?
You bet. So this is 3.3.01, parent 2. We're adding a section D that would read, signs are an invaluable marketing tool for businesses and organizations, as well as a vital component of wayfinding for residents and visitors alike. Supervisor Cotter.
I understand what, or at least I think I understand at least part of what Supervisor Ebert is getting at. But I think the two adjectives are a little inappropriate. They're more editorial comment than statement. I mean, invaluable is a matter of judgment. And the other one, I've forgotten what it was. I don't have it written in front of me. Vital. I think it's a fair statement to say that signs are... and a part of the business, but to say that they're vital is subjective to some degree.
Supervisor Sobranek.
It's nothing more than a statement. What are people getting hung up on? Excuse me.
Supervisor Friedland. Other discussion on the amendment? Henceforth known as the Ebert Amendment, because I'm having a hard time keeping track of amendments. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Noes, raise your hand, please. I should have done it on the computer. The noes are Hampson, Mock, Flood, Cruz, Cotter, Karen Johnson, Jay Johnson. That amendment passes on a vote that... escapes me in numbers. That amendment is approved. Further discussion on the now twice amended, or thrice amended, pardon me, four times amended. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going to, this is just a question that maybe the committee looked at.
I'm sorry, we don't want to hear from you unless you have an amendment to offer. I'm joking. Supervisor Wood, you have the floor with my apologies.
Thank you. That's 33.04, and it's after number 7, like go to page 8 in the, what is this color? Yellow.
Goldenrod,
canary,
I believe it is.
Canary, goldenrod. Okay, so number 7 is at the top. Go to C and then go down to 3. The last sentence says, signs found to be too bright will be adjusted to meet these standards after notification by the county. So my question is, who is going to be monitoring this? Is it up to citizens to complain Do you complain to the county? Do the sign companies submit reports on electrical use so we can tell how bright something is by how much voltage is used or something? Or how are we going to put that into effect?
Bright, Mr. Handy, would you please answer that?
Sure. The sign ordinance will be administered by the zoning department. The sign companies or et cetera will get permits or whatever based on the ordinance. The enforcement will be completed by zoning department staff. And currently, through our permitting process, we have a number of different ways that we find out about violations, whether they be by complaint from residents or by something that we see when we're out in the field, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that's unique with this is most of the electronic message units are controlled by a computer, via computer. And so it's fairly easy for us then to request a printout of the page of the computer that's being monitored by the company, whichever company that installed it and then maintains that sign. And so there may not even be a requirement to go in the field. We'll be able to see some of the nit meter things and things like that, that as a report that we can get from the company. However, there's that saying, trust but verify. We will have equipment also to go out in the field and verify what the nits are and things like that. And so there's probably a fairly complex sounding but actual simple process to this, and that is same as what we do for zoning permits. It'll be an inspection process by our staff.
Thank you.
Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we on the ordinance as a whole? Is that where we're at for discussion? Are we
there? Is it? Right now we are discussing the up to this point amended ordinance. I do think there are other amendments coming, but
okay,
yes.
I'd like to speak when we're done with the amendments.
Okay. Supervisor Weers.
I can wait for amendments also.
Oh, Supervisor Friedland.
Okay. Thank you again. And also I want to thank the people who have come tonight, some of them who live near the overpass where the electronic sign is, but from all over the county as well. First, I want to reiterate just really quickly, since we're talking about findings and purposes and that sort of thing, that our proposal is really very pro-business. It's our hope for signage that's useful and helpful to our businesses and institutions without losing the unique character of La Crosse County, which is the greatest asset in attracting commerce and growth. So if I were to put a purpose statement or a finding statement, that's what it would be. So we had a public hearing. It was very conclusive. There were over 200 people there. There were 48 people who spoke in favor of a strict ordinance, either the ordinance as it was or something stricter. There were 11 people who spoke against it. Four of them were business people. The others were employees or owners of sign companies. Then there was a PRD committee meeting on January 3rd where some big changes were made even after this very conclusive hearing, but that was in an effort to give the sign companies still another chance to weigh in, and I respect that process, and I want to get on with getting this ordinance into effect. There's some things that happened recently about making signs taller, making them bigger, that I don't care for at all. But I have two amendments, and only two amendments that I want to be making this evening. Also, I want to point out that if the ordinance doesn't turn out exactly as we want, exactly as I want, or as exactly as the sign companies want, that because of something we wrote in the ordinance about periodic review, we will be talking about it again in the future, so nothing is going to be really final forever. But at the public hearing and in the numerous emails that the county board supervisors received, people talked about flashing lights and changing lights that bothered them. That really seems to be the biggest problem with electronic signs, whether it's the billboard or it's the on-premise signs. And so my First Amendment has to do with changing the dwell time of the signs. It would be to amend 33.04 General Provisions 9B7 from 4 seconds to 8 seconds. And all of you have on your desk.
Hold on for a second, Supervisor Friedland. You're making that as a motion. Let's get.
Yes. Okay.
It's been moved by Supervisor Friedland to amend Parent 9, Parent B, point 7 to read 8 seconds instead of 4 seconds. Is there seconded by Supervisor Cruz? So back to you, Supervisor Friedland. I just wanted to get it on the floor.
Thank you. On your desk is a document that's a few pages long called Reasons for Concern About Hold Time. And you can see it starts off by saying that Jerry Wachtel, who was the respected highway expert, national expert, who came to the city of La Crosse, talked about 10 seconds as being recommended for safe driving. The Signage Foundation, which is a nonprofit foundation that is funded by the sign companies, talks about different circumstances for different hold times, but generally 8 seconds is the recommended hold time that the Signage Foundation recommends. If you flip through this, you'll see what other communities are doing throughout Wisconsin, throughout the Midwest, in other parts of the country. There are many places where electronic message units are completely prohibited. Other places where the hold time, like Denver, is 60 minutes, Minnetonka, 20 minutes, places in Wisconsin, Oconomowoc, Watertown, 1 minute. West Salem has a six-second hold time. So we started out really looking at something strict. We started out at 3 a day, and that's justified here. You can see how it's justified here. Then we dropped it down to 60 minutes, and now and then it went to 8 seconds. And I really ask that it remain at 8 seconds. There's a number of reasons. Number one again is the safety reason. That's always should be the first concern. Number two is the high priority that needs to be given to the value of private property. Residents who live near the sign, near signs, any electronic signs, tell me time and again that it's the flash of the message that's the worst thing about the electronic signs. The faster they flash, the worse it is. So 4 seconds is very quick. 8 seconds would be much better. I would really like to see it more than that. And again, at the public hearing, people talked about flashing blinking lights, distracting in an unpleasant way, and they want to minimize the stress to drivers and residents alike. Something that happened at the January 3rd PRD committee meeting that I'd like to bring back is that we made the signs bigger at that meeting. We went from, in commercial districts, we went from 32 square foot signs to 40 square foot signs and 16 square foot signs to 24 square foot. Let's see, 16 to 24 and 32 to 40. Right, and that was in an effort to make the signs bigger so that they could have more of a message on them, so that they could be more readable. And that should be sufficient so that the sign companies can have effective signage that gets their message across, could be read easily. 8 seconds will still, in many circumstances, allow a car driving by to see two messages if the sign company can't put it all on one message. So it was my understanding that we were going to make the sign, if we made the signs bigger, we would keep the hold time at 8 seconds. So I'd like to go back to that, and that's my amendment.
So discussion on Friedland Amendment 1, which is the hold time
changing from 4 to 8 seconds. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. This harkens me back to my days in education when, at one time, one of the cues we would give students quietly was to flash lights. And we learned shortly after that technique was used that that could trigger epileptic seizures in some children. So this business about the effect of flashing lights on some people's brains is serious, and when you consider that happening when someone is driving, I think it's cause for being very prudent in this decision.
Other discussion? Supervisor Pedretti.
Again, just to help put it in context, we received some amendments from some of the sign companies, and we were working with Quick Trip in particular, who asked that either the sign be increased or the time be decreased. So we had the debate, we increased the size, and then for some reason the discussion went back to decreasing the time. I think this, if I remember right, the sign companies were fine with the bigger sign. There was some discussion of the older signs, the ones that are smaller, and that's the ones I had concern with, and I struggled with how to vote at that, because the older signs, you know, maybe 8 seconds isn't necessarily going to work real well for them. And so I struggled with that vote. But now I'm convinced that we need to go back to the 8. That's how it was originally in this bill, in the ordinance, and I think we need to go back to it. And the reason is that the older technology, yes, may be difficult, but I was told by multiple sign companies that technology, you have to update it all the time. So those signs will get updated. And rather than penalize the rest of the county by having these bigger signs that are going to go flashing more often, I think we keep it at the 8 seconds. So I would support this amendment.
Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to recognize all the members of the PRD committee for the incredible amount of time and hard work that they've put into reaching this point. I think at this point, to be making these amendments really is not in good faith. When we consider the amount of time that the sign companies have spent working with the committee to reach these compromises, and I am not persuaded by these arguments. I think we have to recognize that the people that run these sign companies and the businesses that purchase the signs and operate the signs do it for good reason. They do it because they think it's going to increase their business. And so I oppose any further amendments.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think anybody's suggesting that we're doing any flashing or anything like that. The times have been set. I've used the example a thousand times about the La Crosse County Board annual picnic is going to be at Neshonnik. It's, you know, when you're talking the setbacks, the size of these signs, you only have so much space to present so much information. You got to be able to have it appear so that people can read it. Now, I mean, some people are not concerned about what if they're effective or not. Just being there is a nuisance to them. Still, to this day, I've heard a lot of opinions and suggestions. No data that's backed up by proof that says we're talking safety issues. People even down at where this gentleman spoke in La Crosse, more or less against the signs or regulating the signs. There's individuals walking around flashing pictures suggesting that there was a car accident by that LED sign on Highway 16, and nothing could be farther from the truth because police reports stated that that individual was looking in her back seat for something. And even to stoop to that level that you would suggest that, I think is ridiculous. Talking about the public hearing, yeah, there were 48 people. I would have guessed more, but that spoke against the sign or more restrictions. You know, you can use that number. I don't want to minimize that Dirk Grancelic from the Chamber of La Crosse, Mike Brown from the Tavern League represented probably 12 to 1,300 business people, chamber people, not people that get up and say, I'm a business owner, but, well, I sell Amway or something out of my house. You need directional signs to get people into their businesses. I mean, if you want to put clear numbers to it, that's the case. When you say we're pro-business, this ordinance as it stands if it goes in, the LED signs, there will not be another one in La Crosse County. Now, people may suggest they need to be regulated, but there will not be another one in La Crosse County. Now, I want people to think about that when they're voting. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about your neighbors working. And even some county board people here had the audacity to say billboards are ineffective. And I'd like to know their education and background in this when we've got some of the largest business community leaders here that are throwing lots of money into billboard signs. And I guess that's all I have at this point.
So on the amendment, I'm a little concerned we're straying from that. On the amendment, Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Mr. Feehan that the committee did a yeoman's job of working on this ordinance, and I've been following it as it worked its way through the process, and I admire the amount of time and diligence that the committee exercised in looking at this issue. Nobody on either side was completely happy with the outcome. Some people feel one side or the other had some advantage or underhanded approaches or whatever. I heard both sides being very critical of the other in terms of good faith and bad faith. I disagree with Mr. Feehan in terms of saying that it's bad faith to bring this in at this point. That's how the legislative process works. But here's where I'm coming from on this issue. We have a committee process here. If you have a committee that's a bunch of idiots that spent 2 seconds and they passed it through, maybe you don't have to honor that. This committee did not do that. They spent a lot of time on this ordinance, and I think that they tried to do the best job that was fair to both sides. And so my position is that any further amendments, and that's why I asked the question about where those earlier ones came from, when I heard it was a number of the members of the committee, I respected that. But I have a concern of any amendments that come in that were not vetted by the committee and not approved by the committee don't respect our committee process. And so while I respect what Supervisor Friedland is doing with this one and what I assume is her next one that's coming in, I want to further respect the committee process, and I want the committee to look at these amendments and bring it back next month and tell us if they like it or don't like it, because they're the ones I'm going to listen to. I followed this as closely as I can, but I didn't put in the dozens of hours that committee has put in on this, and I know that they've got what I consider a very balanced membership on that committee, and so my motion at this point is to refer this amendment to committee.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Doyle, seconded by Supervisor Feehan to refer, let me finish stating it, please, to refer the Friedland First Amendment to Planning Resources and Development Committee. Your point of order, Supervisor.
By the way, if I could continue what I said on that, it would be with the expectation that it comes back next
with
month with the rest of the ordinance.
Point of order, Supervisor Pedretti.
That was my question. How do you send just an amendment back without the whole ordinance? I just wanted to clarify. Bye. Thank
and
you.
Just keep in mind this is our first reading for everybody. So we have the motion is to refer this amendment back to committee. You still have the floor, Supervisor Doyle.
Well, a question then for Corp Counsel. Do I need to send the whole ordinance back, or you know what I want to accomplish? Tell me what I need to say to do that.
Would you speak into the microphone?
If you wanted to keep this ordinance here going first reading.
I want us to vote on the ordinance next month, but I want the committee to have another chance to look at this.
Maybe instead of saying referring it, maybe what you want to do is just say you're recommending that the committee take up this amendment and the next amendment at the committee level.
Okay, would they have the authority to do that if the ordinance itself isn't sent back to them?
Right, because they can still consider.
They can
still make recommendations back.
Okay, then that's what he said. That's what I said.
And and Supervisor Feehan seconded Supervisor Doyle's motion to ask PR&D committee to take up. Is that
do I have
consider?
The floor?
Not yet. You don't, because I'm still. To consider just the amendments. Just that is in order.
That's what it is.
It happens.
So This is payback, I know, for some. So it's been moved by Supervisor Doyle and seconded by Supervisor Feehan to ask the PR&D committee to consider the Friedland amendments.
The one that's on the floor.
Just this one? I thought you were going to do it about the, okay.
Well, I don't
We can't do it. Okay, the first Friedland amendment.
When that comes up, I will, but there's only one in front.
Can we just do this as like a gentleman? I mean, do we really have to vote on this and debate whether or not the committee considers something on their agenda? Couldn't the chair of the committee be asked to do that? I know. I was hoping to get it taken off the floor. But discussion on the motion. Hang on for just 1 second. Just hang on. So discussion on the motion. Thank you for your patience. Point of order, Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. It was stated in the recent debate that it is up to the committees to do the work, but and also the statement has been made that we are we should not be voting on this tonight. But this is the reason that we have two readings. And normally we dispose of the first reading very quickly because it's an issue that is not unduly significant for the need for debate. But in this particular situation, we are totally within the rules, as I understand them, that to have the debate tonight, we are totally within the rules for this board to receive the recommendations of the committee in relation to any of the business we do. And so why is there a problem with us discussing
Supervisor Cotter, I'm not sure that this is a point of information or a point of order. I think we have a motion on the floor. I have ruled that it's an appropriate motion. You can disagree with that.
We're
trying to dispense with that. And the discussion that we have tonight, you're absolutely right, is once a first reading occurs, this group, the entire body, can debate any and all amendments, whether they come from the committee or individuals as a whole. So if you're clarifying that,
yeah.
Is that okay? Point.
Thank you.
So discussion on the motion to ask PR&D to consider the first Friedland amendment. Just on this motion, Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. There are some unusual circumstances here. Ordinarily, we could send something back to committee. We could get recommendations. We could send it back a couple of times. We could have it could go on. But we have a moratorium in place that expires next month. It is very important to do a first reading this month and a second reading next month. Now, I was told by Corporation Council that if changes were made at the committee level, or if a change like this is considered to be a major change, I wouldn't consider this to be a major change. This is just one point in 500 points in the ordinance. But if it is considered to be a major change, then that means that next month, rather than it being a second reading, it would become a first reading again. And then we have the problem of being able to complete this in time for the vote before the moratorium expires. And I don't think anybody wants the moratorium to continue on. I don't. I would like to get this done. I would like to respect everything, all the hard work that the PRD committee has done over the last 8 months, 9 months, many, many meetings. I'd like to get this completed. So I think that procedurally, the best thing to do would be to vote on this now. If we vote on it and it's more strenuous, shall we say, than what the committee had decided before, we could go back next month and bring it back if the committee wants to discuss it in between and maybe make a recommendation or something like that. But I think procedurally, if we send it back to committee, get the committee's opinion, then we're playing with fire that the ordinance isn't going to get voted on before the moratorium expires. And also, this is the kind of point that the PRD committee can make a recommendation on, but 4 seconds, 8 seconds, 1 minute, I think this is a matter that the whole board really needs to weigh in on and give their feeling on. My next amendment is a little bit more technical. It has to do with setbacks and view of size. That might be something for the PRD committee to maybe take a look at and make a recommendation. But this one, I think, is easy for the board to understand, and that's exactly why I made it here rather than to bring it back to the PRD committee again.
We have a number of hands up. Supervisor
Bean. I'd like to
raise
a point of order, though. I have a question for Corporation Counsel. It is not my intention to delay this. It's my intention that this come back next month as a second reading, that we can vote on it, and that what happens in the meantime, even if this would be considered a major amendment, would not slow that process down. Am I okay on that, or is it going to delay things? Because that's not my intention.
Right. Now, let me clarify that. And I did speak with Supervisor Friedland about that, because our ordinance says that if an amendment is approved and is substantial or major, the ordinance and amendment shall be referred to the next meeting of the county board unless two-thirds of the supervisors present vote to consider the ordinance as amended at the present meeting. I interpret that to mean at the next meeting, if there's an amendment made, in other words, if it would be recommended it comes back to this body at the next meeting, which is the second consideration, and it's considered major, then it's referred to the next meeting of the county board by that. That's the danger.
Okay, so your ruling on this, or maybe I need to ask the chair, is would you consider this major? Would this push us back a month?
Well, I think that's where I think the county board chair can rule, because it goes on to say if the county board chair determines that the amendment is dilatory or frivolous or finds it to be minor or technical, the ordinance and amendment shall not be referred to the next county board meeting. So I think that the chair could rule on that, and this body could overturn this if they think that the chair is wrong and that it's not minor, it's major.
What would the ruling of the chair be then?
That is such a good question.
sorry, Tara.
Especially coming from the supervisor sitting in the back of the room who used to sit in this chair.
It's fun to be a backbencher.
Yeah, I'm glad that's working out for you. It's the preference of the chair that we dispose of this issue tonight, that we take a vote on this issue tonight would be my preference.
Of course, that wasn't the question I asked you, however.
What did you ask me?
Would you rule that this is a major amendment, in which case it would delay it by a month?
Yes.
Okay, then here's what I'm going to try to do. I am going to see if I can get approval to withdraw my amendment and try this instead, that the approval be contingent upon approval or ratification by the PRD committee. I want to hear what they have to say. I think it's important.
So this is what the chair has to say. The process is that this is a first reading.
Right.
So we can. There will be amendments that can come next month also. And my intent has been to try and avoid that from happening so that we can know what the ordinance is going into next month's final reading of the ordinance. The reason I said I think this is a major issue is because of the debate that it spurred. And that's, you know, so sign companies, whether or not they think it's 4-8, maybe it doesn't matter to them, but the debate that has come from this amendment makes me think that it's a big deal to this board. I'm willing to be persuaded on that, but that was why I ruled the way that I did. And if you go back to the committee and make it contingent upon how they weigh in, I think we put ourselves up against a wall. But that I'm willing to be challenged on that. Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've looked at this ordinance related to ordinances and ad hoc committees quite carefully in the last week or 10 days. And doesn't it say that let's say, even if we said that the amendment was substantial or major, that we could still vote on it and it wouldn't have to be referred if two-thirds of us agreed?
Yes, right. That's okay. Absolutely the way that the ordinance reads. But it would take a two-thirds vote next month to say we all, you know, two-thirds of us agree that this is the ordinance we thought we were going to be voting on, basically. So thank you for that clarification. So we still have a motion on the floor to ask the PR&D committee to consider Friedland Amendment 1. Are we ready to vote? There were a lot of hands up. Okay. We're ready to vote. Let's do this on the computer. Yeah, on the computer to refer, to ask, in essence, to refer the Friedland Amendment 1 back to PR&D. On the computer. The question was called.
I wanted to speak on referral, and I had my hand up, and nobody called on me. Thank you.
My apologies. We're on the computer, on referral to PR&D. The ruling of the chair. Are you wanting to challenge the ruling of the chair? The chair ruled that we were voting. Have any votes come back? We had 20. The ruling of the chair has been challenged as to whether or not a vote can be called for on the motion to refer to PR&D. On ending debate. The ruling of the chair of ending debate has been challenged by Supervisor Ebert. Point of order, Supervisor Mettinger.
If I get frustrated by one thing, it's that you take too long to call the question. You gave this body plenty of time to object to the roll call. You made very clearly stated that nobody raised their voice. This is a frivolous
But the ruling of the chair has been challenged, and that takes precedent. The ruling of the chair has been challenged. Not all votes have been cast.
Question for Corporation Counsel. You cannot challenge ruling of the chair in the middle of a roll call.
I think he meant to ask, can you challenge the ruling of the chair during a roll call vote?
I'm going to support it. It's too late. There's a roll call vote. It's already been challenged. It's too late.
Okay. We'll save that. Hold that challenge of the chair. I'm sure it'll come up again in a minute. So we are voting on the referral. Or I'm sorry. Yeah, we are. Will the clerk read the... The motion is to ask PR&D to consider the Friedland Amendment number 1. That's what's being voted on the computer now, please. Well, some people voted already. There were 26 votes cast already at the time that the chair was challenged. Supervisor Richmond, we're waiting for your vote. The vote is 13 aye, 16 no. That motion has failed. We are back to the Friedland Amendment. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question was brought up about referral. In my experience here and on the City Council, we do referrals, and we do call special meetings, and hopefully the PRD could call a special meeting. I don't see anything wrong with that before the next county board meeting. I would like to refer this back. I think we've gone long way too long and making too many amendments tonight that the PRD probably isn't sure of either, and neither is the sign company operators. I guess I'm surprised that we have all these amendments tonight, and they should have been probably discussed more at the committee level.
Supervisor,
so I'll refer that back to the PRD.
So it has been moved by Supervisor Richmond and seconded by Supervisor Feehan to refer the entire ordinance. I'm looking for to refer the entire ordinance back to Planning Resources and Development Committee. Discussion on the motion to refer. Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you. I don't agree with this motion. It has never been my intention to delay this. My intention was simply to get input from PRD. If we send this back to committee, then next month it comes out, it's going to be first reading again, and we will go past the moratorium. So while I respect their desire to hear from PRD, we're going to have to come up with a more creative way to do it than that, because I don't think it's in anybody's best interest for us to have chaos when the moratorium expires.
Because we have enough chaos tonight, we don't need any more. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a public meeting at which time business and community residential could speak to this. PR&D had another meeting, and the sign companies came again with their amendments. I would like the county board members to have some input at this point, which is what we usually do. A committee brings the resolution to the whole board. And that's what I think we are doing tonight. I would like to proceed.
Proceed with what?
Other discussion on the motion to refer. Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we sat on the committee and we worked. This was an issue that came up at the last meeting. We debated it for 5 to 10 or 15 minutes. I'm not sure. We went to 7.5, we went to 4, we went to 6, we went to, we discussed it and it was voted on. I'd like to see our vote. I don't remember what the vote was, but we concluded that the majority was at 4-2. We did this because there was a request for it to be done, and now we're doing it all over again. I guess, you know, we are on record for the 4-2. And we had the discussion with all of the affected people, and that was our conclusion. And yes, the whole county board can make changes. There's no doubt about it. But I would suggest one way or the other that our committee reviews this before the final vote next month. And I don't want to prolong it because I don't want to come out of retirement and come out here and vote on one issue after I'm retired.
You'd be glad to know we're not voting on that item, Supervisor Bina. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification. If this motion passes to refer back, it would go back as the amended ordinance from tonight, correct? And so does that mean then any other amendments after that vote would not be accepted because it's now off the agenda and we're moving on to the new agenda item, or would you still accept amendments to this ordinance?
Well, given the moratorium that puts our back up against the wall at the end of February, my hope would be that we could get all amendments on the floor tonight. The motion to refer could still happen, but if the county board supervisors have amendments to be made, I would hope that they would still come forward tonight.
Okay, so even if this motion passes, you're still going to allow amendments?
Well, yes.
Thank you.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. I was just wondering, since this would make it a first reading next month, could we then do the first and second reading in the same month?
Following our ordinance, we could. That's the 2/3. Yes. I'm sorry, Dave.
That's right.
Yeah.
It says that
microphone.
It says that the ordinance, after introduction, the ordinance shall be referred to the next meeting for, in other words, for the second reading, unless the rule is waived by 2/3 vote of the supervisors. So still take 2/3 vote.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The vote in committee was 6-1 when we voted on this particular situation.
Supervisor Pedretti.
I would hope you would vote against referral back. As Supervisor Meyer said, it was 6-1. I actually am changing my vote. I don't think you're going to see that on the committee. We had the debate. The reason we bring it here is to debate it as a policy. What does the county board feel? The same we did with Mr. Ebert's amendment on the zoning. He brought it to our committee. We voted on a committee. It didn't pass. He brought it here. He has the right to do that. I think this is the same thing. You have the right to bring amendments to here. We aren't going to sit here and redebate the whole ordinance. This is a really good ordinance. It's got some good stuff in it. It's a perfect no. Are there going to be some changes down the road? Probably. There will be amendments. What we're asking for tonight is just a policy decision by this board. I don't think sending it back to PR&D is going to do any good, so I'm going to vote against that.
On the motion to refer on the computer now.
Come up here, she'll talk.
She's right. This isn't going to change much. Except it won't be as much as Kyle does at home.
Right. Kyle's still here.
No, he's getting 12 feet.
Supervisor Geary, do we have your vote? The motion fails on a vote of 5 in favor, 25 opposed. Back to the Friedland Amendment. Discussion on the Friedland First Amendment. Amendment. Yeah, amendment, sorry. Supervisor Mock.
I'm the lonely person who voted for keeping the 8 seconds. And really the main reason I did is because we agreed that we would allow the signs to be larger. Okay, if you got a larger sign, you're more than likely going to put more on your sign. So aren't you going to need more seconds for people to read it? So I think it makes sense to change it back to 8 seconds instead of the 4 seconds.
Any other discussion on the Friedland Amendment? Supervisor Karen Johnson.
Thank you. I agree with Supervisor Mock. I think this is a great compromise. As the only person on this board who comes from the generation who has the most distracted driving, I would like to say that the longer we can hold those times, the longer we should keep them. And I would encourage the rest of you to do so, too. I serve a district that is 95% people of my generation, 95% students. They also drive around in your districts, just to let you know. And your children and grandchildren probably are in my generation as well. And as we do like flashing lights, and as I like to look at the flavor of the day of custard at Culver's come across the screen, at some point it's not the best decision. So I agree with 8 seconds, and I will be voting in favor.
Supervisor Sobranek.
In reference to this amendment, I move to limit the debate one time.
Supervisor Sobranek, was that a motion to limit speakers to one time only?
Correct.
On the...
I think it's been kicked around for over an hour.
Supervisor Sobranek moves that debate be limited to one time at the microphone per supervisor, seconded by Supervisor Mettinger. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes are Ebert, Ferries, Weirs, Pedretti, Friedland, Burke, Meyer, Hampson, Burns. That motion carries with 9 no votes. So we are limited to one speech per supervisor. Supervisor Geary.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Your one and only time. Sorry.
That's fine. The length of the message refers to a minimum amount of time. The advertiser or the vendor or whoever's using this can have them for much longer periods of time if they so choose. They could have them 15 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute.
we're only speaking of minimum time here. This isn't a time they have to change them every 4 seconds or 8 seconds. I think what works for one business, a different time may be required due to the length of the message or something. You drive down the causeway and you see a sign that says Pepsi. Pretty simple to read. It's one word. And other signs, you know, St. Francis Hospital does eye surgery and all this other stuff maybe takes longer to read. But it only refers to minimum. I think the advertisers or the vendors could figure that out.
Other discussion on Friedland Amendment? On the computer. See how you limited debate, Supervisor Sobranek? Yes, if you're in favor of the amendment to change it from 4 seconds to 8 seconds. No, if you were opposed. That amendment is approved, 18 ayes, 10 noes, one abstention, one absent, five excused. Sorry. It is passed. You have the floor again, Supervisor Friedland.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, my other amendment is really pretty easy to understand, but it does go into some territory that the PRD committee did go over, and I think, let me state it, and then why don't you say whether you consider this to be major or not, because I would be okay with a committee reviewing this at their meeting in between. Or it may be the will of the group that they want to just go ahead and...
Let's get it on the floor and see what happens.
So my other is an amendment to 33.04 paren 9 paren B 3. Okay, so what happened was...
Will you just read it into the record first, please?
Okay, sorry about that. On-premise electronic signs shall
be
allowed...
Is your microphone still on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I too close or not close enough?
There you go.
Okay. On-premise electronic signs shall be allowed subject to the following. They may not be located within 300 feet of an RPA district. They must have a setback of 400 feet if they are 40 square feet or larger. They must have a setback of 600 feet if they are 100 square feet or larger.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Pedretti. So just for clarification, this is 33.04 paren 9 paren B 3. It already reads the first one that's written on the page, the 300 feet of an RPA district. So Supervisor Friedland's amendment would be to add... the second and third sentences must have a setback of 400 feet if 40 square feet or larger, and must have a setback of 600 feet if 100 feet square feet or larger. So that's the amendment, is to add those two additional requirements. And it was seconded by Supervisor Pedretti. You still have the floor, Supervisor Friedland.
Okay, thank you. So what happened here was that the committee... remove the height restrictions, and the height restrictions determined how far the setback would be for an electronic message unit. Now, we're only talking about electronic message units here. We're not talking about regular signs. We're talking about the electronic message units that change.
And it's on-premise electronic.
On-premise only, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, only on-premise signs. So when that sliding scale was removed, we removed the so many feet per foot. It went from 300 feet to 500 feet. So we have a situation now where we have taller signs. Any electronic message unit can be 20 feet instead of, I think it started at 10 before. They can all go up to 20 feet. And we made the signs, the electronic message units, bigger. They went from 16 to 24 and 24 to 40. and then we added 100 on Highway 53 instead of just on the interstate. But what we didn't do was to address, or what they didn't do, what the committee didn't do, was to address appropriate setbacks based on these taller signs and these larger signs. So what my amendment attempts to do is to make the setback appropriate to the size of the electronic message unit. And I would say that 300 feet is way too close to have a 100 square foot, 20 foot tall electronic message unit away from your residential line or your nursing home or your hospital or your church or your school. I would also say that 300 feet is too close to have a 40 square foot electronic message unit. A 40 square foot electronic message unit is approximately the size of the one on the causeway. I think it's called Abra. It's part of Dahl Motor. And you can see in one of the handouts that I gave you what 300 feet would look like, what 400 feet would look like, 500 feet would look like. And I think that gives you an idea of how close it really is and why it needs to be further back. Linda's Bakery is about in that size also. So if that's that would also give you another idea. So I tried to make this make the setbacks more appropriate to the size of the electronic message units, and that's what my amendment is.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if Mr. Handy could come in for some expert.
You mean the very questions. Bright Mr. Handy?
The very talented Mr. Handy.
I've heard them all, Jerry.
Mr. Handy, I represent the folks from the village of West Salem, which just doesn't, and also the Hamilton. I can't think of anywhere in Hamilton where one of these signs then could be put up. Can you and you're from Hamilton, so it seems to me that there would be, maybe in 1 or 2% of the county that these we'd find a place that would fit this criteria?
Well, the question is, the question really goes to size of the sign, the 400-foot, the 600-foot setback. So basically what you would see is effectively the 600-foot setback would require the parcel to be 1,200-foot size, and the sign could go in the dead center of that 1,200-foot size with a 600-foot setback. With a 400-foot setback, the parcel would need to be 800-foot, and the sign could go in the dead center of that parcel. You could stack parcels that are industrial or commercially zoned, and that would give you some additional setback, but typically the industrial or commercial parcels are linear in nature because they're along roads. And so that depth could cause you some issues because those parcels aren't typically that deep away from the road. So in looking at the county from a zoning standpoint, there are very few areas where the 600-foot setback would allow a sign of that size.
So it almost bans them in the out county. Is that, and not completely, but very, very few opportunities to put up one of these signs. Would that be a fair statement?
I'd have to get a map and show where the zoning districts are and start to look at the sizes, but that's accurate. You don't have a lot of parcels that have that kind of depth.
Thank you very much.
Supervisor Weirs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I love examples, and so this is where I use the example of basically you're banning electronic message units. We have a large convenience store chain in town, Quick Trip, and their price signs are electronic message units. For example, let's look at a commercially zoned lot. Maybe all of you are familiar, in the town of Madary, across from TCI, there's now a lot there that's now commercially zoned. Let's say someone wanted to go in there, like a Quick Trip or like some other business that has an electronic message unit. On Highway 16 seems very appropriate for this kind of a business or a sign. That sign could not go there because it is within 300 feet of a home adjacent, it's within the 300 feet. So I don't think we should do everything by example, by taking, picking out certain areas, but this is too restrictive. We are banning
signs within 300 feet, and it's just not appropriate. I think that we did, we could look at it within smaller or a less distance, less of a distance. But if you take an example and say it just doesn't work in a place where it seems completely appropriate, then we're obviously being too restrictive. So I'll be voting against this amendment.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you. I also have a question for Charlie. When we use the term setback in this situation, we're talking setback from all sides?
Correct.
So including from the road. So to use the another example that we've talked about in the past, the Quick Trip sign on Highway OT, which is, I don't know, maybe 50 feet from the road or whatever, would have to be 600 feet. I mean, they don't go that far back, but, I mean, it seems to defeat the purpose of a sign to say it has to be 600 feet from the road, if we're talking that the setback means all sides.
The setback is from the nearest adjacent residential, is it RPA district? Is that how you're, okay, so the nearest district line, zoning district line, not from the road.
Well, but the language here says must have a setback of 400 feet or must have a setback of 600 feet. I thought the word setback is from whatever line. I don't see setback from the RPA. I see the word setback, period.
How we've worded it in the rest of the ordinance and how I assume she's wording this amendment, because I haven't read it, but I assume it is from the nearest RPA district line. That's worded that way in the ordinance. So it's from the nearest zoning district that has a residential, public, or agricultural zoning classification. And so in the OT example from Quick Trip, the nearest RPA district line would be the home that's northwest of the Quick Trip property, and that's within a couple hundred feet.
Dave, do you agree with that definition of setback in this context?
I think that's what the intent was.
Microphone.
I think that's what the intent was of
well, I'm asking for more than the intent. Is that what it actually accomplishes, is that it only relates to setback from the RPA district?
From the RPA district.
Not
line.
From a property line. No. Where. So when we use the term setback in the rest of our ordinances, that doesn't apply in this?
Right. Where maybe setback wasn't the right word, but should be located.
Well, and that's, yeah, right. That's what I'm trying to get at, is I want to understand if we're using the right language here.
In our ordinances, each time we refer to a setback, we do refer to a setback from something. And most other cases, like in the zoning ordinance, we refer to the setback from the property line. So
right.
You're used to that. You're comfortable with that.
Right.
But that is referred to specifically in the verbiage of the ordinance. And this setback refers to the RPA district line.
Thank you. You're right.
Supervisor Geary.
Charlie, last month you had a handout and you had a few, I think, red sparkles on it some places or whatever. And you said that those were the only areas you could put under, before we had all these amendments, you said there's only a few areas in the county you could even stick one of these signs. But these signs aren't going to go into any area that doesn't have a certain traffic volume or that zone for some type of business to operate. I mean, are we to the point now where the only place you could put some of these things is up in Farmington, where you got maybe large open areas where they wouldn't put a sign of that nature anyway, or what? In any populated or heavily traveled area that's been developed.
I think it's exactly opposite what you just said. The only areas where these signs are going to go are in commercial or industrial areas, and those are typically fairly close to the incorporated municipalities. In Farmington, a significant majority of their zoning is agricultural. And so, you know, these sizes aren't allowed in the agricultural district. Great. In fact, they're set back from the agricultural district. So it's there. These areas of industrial and commercial zoning are typically going to land real close to the incorporated municipalities.
So you're saying this ordinance, it wouldn't apply to La Crosse or Onalaska or Holman or
That's
West Salem?
Correct. That's correct.
So how many areas on a percentage of the county that it would apply to? Could it fit in 1% of the county?
I don't know the exact answer, but I think it's less than 10%, probably less than 5%.
Mr. Lang.
Could I just make a point of information, and maybe Charlie can clarify this, but the second part of the The second part of the amendment talks about a setback of 600 feet if 100 square feet or larger sign. Yeah. And I don't know if you can have an on-premise electronic sign over 100 square feet, so I don't know if it's needed. It is for off-premises, but on-premises, I think the largest you can have is 100 square feet per side fronting a Class 4 highway. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I just want to make sure that we want to make sure that that's needed.
I'm going to ask that Supervisor Friedland be heard on this.
Right. That should probably have said 100 square feet, period, because there can be 100 square foot on-premise signs. So it should have said a setback of 600 feet for a 100 square foot sign. And also addressing Supervisor Doyle's comment about how we're measuring this, it should have also said that these distances were from the RPA district. That was how I intended it to be.
So, Supervisor Friedland, I'm going to ask you to come up with revised wording to your own amendment while we hear from Supervisor Karen Johnson on the debate. So will you clean that up, please, while we're hearing from Supervisor Johnson?
Thank you. I just have one question for Mr. Handy. If the language in the amendment were to say property line instead of RPA district, how would that change the feasibility of putting up signs? How many more signs would we have? Does that make sense?
It does. If it refers to just the property line of that specific property, there would be probably quite a bit less than 1% of the properties in La Crosse County that would qualify for that sign.
So we would have
basically
fewer
none.
Signs if it said property line instead of RPA.
Correct.
Thank you.
Did that answer your question, Supervisor Johnson? Okay. Supervisor Mettinger. I haven't seen any other hands that haven't been called on. Supervisor Friedland's going to clean up the amendment. Go ahead, Supervisor Friedland.
Oh, well, I just I could take one from here. So the amendment would read, on-premise electronic signs shall be allowed subject to the following: may not be located within 300 feet of an RPA district, must have a setback of 400 feet if 40 square must have a setback of 400 must have a setback of 400 square feet from the RPA district if 40 square feet or larger, and must have a setback of 600 feet from the RPA district if 100 square feet, period. And may I make a couple of comments, please?
Hang on for a second. I just want to clarify that the first point about the 300 feet of an RPA district is already in the ordinance.
That's
so
correct.
That's not an amendment.
That's correct.
So the only Supervisor Friedland is moving to amend the wording of her amendment as she just read. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Cotter. Discussion. Supervisor Doyle, it frightens me to call on you, but
I know. Just trying to keep it interesting. A question for Supervisor Friedland. Why don't you just use the same language as in the first sentence, where you say, may not be located within 300 feet of an RPA district? Then why don't you say, may not be located within 400 feet of an RPA district if 40 square feet or larger? May not be located within 600 feet of an RPA district if 100 square feet or period. I mean, isn't that what you're trying to accomplish? So why don't you just use consistency then?
Supervisor Friedland.
That's fine. I was just doing this without looking at the ordinance when
sure.
Because
I have a concern
of
using
so
the term
fine.
Setback.
Yeah.
It's necessary.
Okay.
Really.
Mr. Handy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have already, as a body, made an amendment to number 3 that changes it from RPA district line to residential or public district line, so you should really speak in terms of instead of RPA district line, because we're not talking setback from agriculture anymore, just the residential and public districts.
Public institutions.
Then she really needs to change all three of those, not just
right.
The last
and it's
two.
On the floor right now, and it belongs to the group, so we need to dispose of this. How would you like to do that?
Move to refer it back to committee. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Ha ha. So. Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. The RPA should be just
RP, residential or public facilities. That's correct. And the language that was just used by Supervisor Doyle in his best legalese is just fine. So, but if I might make a couple of other comments very quickly in response to some of the other comments.
Well, wait, hang on for a second, Supervisor Friedland. We have an amendment. You made an amendment to your amendment that I think we want to dispose of so we can take it off and start over again with rewording. So let's vote on Supervisor Friedland's amendment to her amendment, and then we can start over again. And then you can make whatever comments you would like to make. I hope we can do this voice vote. All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye. Opposed? Yeah, let's do this on the computer. This is to...
Read it.
Can I just withdraw the amendment?
Well, in the past, we have not been allowed to withdraw amendments. So the point of this is that the amendment to the amendment has improper language in it. And we would like to dispose of it, as in dispose of, and then get cleaned up language back on the floor. So on the computer, can we please dispose of Supervisor Friedland's amendment to her own amendment on the computer?
Why are they voting against it?
We are in the middle of a vote, and a vote no would dispose of the amendment to the amendment.
Can we start over then?
A vote yes. We're already on the computer, folks. A vote no would dispose of the amendment to the amendment. A vote yes would move it forward. Supervisor Mock. Okay. 9 ayes, 21 noes. That is disposed of. I'm at this point going to call on Supervisor Doyle to offer an amendment to the Friedland amendment, please, Supervisor Doyle. No, you think faster than you write, though, so. This is part of Charlie's exercise plan, obviously, is to go back out in the other room.
And it's working so
far. Yeah. Is your microphone on, Supervisor Doyle?
No, because we have... No.
Okay, what do we call it?
Residential and public facilities and infrastructure district.
Institutional.
Institutional, sorry.
So I can't call it an RP district?
No, we don't have that definition.
Well, you could call it an RP district and ask us to add that as a definition.
Well,
we don't have that definition. I'm sorry.
We don't. Okay. So we have to say, the first line needs to say then, may not be located within 300 feet of...
That's already in the ordinance. It's only the last two sentences that have to be corrected.
Have we changed that so it no longer says RPA?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You did. You amended that earlier in the meeting.
Okay, so earlier tonight we fixed that problem that we weren't even talking about or that we didn't think we were talking about.
Right.
Okay, how does it read in the amendment that we passed tonight fixing that? Because that's the same language that I want to use for the next two.
It's on the bottom of the sheet that was handed out that had...
Okay.
The amendments. Right, so residential or public district.
Of the Pedretti
line.
Amendments, then, that 3304, paragraph 9, paragraph B, 3,
yes.
Where it says may not be located within 300 feet of a residential or public district line.
District line.
Okay, that's
correct.
The language we want to use then. So then the next sentence would say may not be located within 400 feet of a residential or public district line. If 40 square feet or larger. And then the next one, and Maureen asked me to make a little bit of a change here, may not be located within 500 feet of a residential or public district line if 100 square feet.
Seconded by Supervisor Friedland. So now discussion on the Doyle amendment to the Friedland amendment. Supervisor Friedland. Oh, yes, Supervisor Cotter.
At one stage, it was said that the size of the sign would be the 40 or now 500, no, or 100. And then sometimes we're saying or larger, and I'd just like to know which.
I think the clarification was that you cannot have an on-premise electronic sign that's larger than 100 feet. So that those words or larger got dropped to the second sentence. Yep. Back to you, Supervisor Friedland.
Okay, thank you. I want to address a few points that have been made. When we came up with numbers and distances to use in our revisions to the ordinance, what we looked at, first of all, most of all, were the real circumstances. We know, as we've talked tonight, that La Crosse County is hilly. It's certain parts of the county are largely agricultural. We have a lot of homes in agricultural districts. Agricultural keeps getting changed to residential. We looked to see what was realistic for homes and churches and assisted living and so forth, and how far it was fair to have them away from lights that changed, that were bright, that carried very far. These electronic signs are not just illuminated signs. They change the face of the environment. They change the face of the city. So we looked at what was fair. And Supervisor Weirs said, well, Highway 16 would be a great place for a quick trip. This is true. However, there are still houses on Highway 16, and it's also fair to look to at the needs of those houses and the people who live there. And if they're homeowners or if they're renters, it matters. These are all people. And in La Crosse County, I think we take care of the people who live here, and we don't require them to go out and buy blackout curtains for their own homes because there are lights that are coming in. So when we came up with these numbers, 300, 400, we did that because we thought they were fair and reasonable numbers. Another point, these are setbacks only from residential areas. Within the commercial zones, these distances will be met easily. So I'm not sure where Mr. Handy comes up with 5 to 10%, and even then he was talking about 600 feet, but there's going to be very few signs that are 100 square feet. Most of them are going to be smaller than that. So I think that the percentage of land available for electronic message units is still substantial in the statement that we are not going to have any more electronic message units in La Crosse as a result of this is just plain outright untrue. There's the possibility of variances that can be given if these distances aren't reasonable. We know that often there'll be intervening buildings, there'll be intervening circumstances, special circumstances that will allow these distances to be shortened. So I think that these distances are fair from homes and businesses. Thank you.
Supervisor Friedland. I'm sorry, Feehen. I get my F's mixed up in the back of the room. My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Charlie Handy. Charlie, the sign off of OT and 53, the Quick Trip sign, with this amendment, would that sign be conforming to the ordinance?
No.
Thank you.
Supervisor Weirs.
Just a quick comment. To put this in perspective, the billboard, the electronic billboard, is 672 square feet. So we're looking at basically a sixth or a seventh of this. If someone were going to put the 100 square foot sign, I just want you to know that a business is not going to put up a sign that is ginormous if they don't need it, and they're just not going to do it. Do you know how much those cost? They're going to want their neighbors to come there. They're going to put an appropriate sign. I feel like we're overly restricting on-premise signs, and we have an off-premise billboard that's 672 square feet. That's less than 200 feet from a property line. So just to put it in perspective, we need to keep on-premise signs. These are not billboards. These are message units. They're price signs. They're advertising, you know, church services, whatever. So that's the perspective. That's why I'm all for appropriate signs in appropriate places, and that's why I'm opposed to this.
Other discussion on the Doyle Amendment to the Friedland Amendment. On the computer, if you are in favor of the Doyle Amendment, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Supervisor Burns, we're waiting on your vote. The Doyle Amendment to the Friedland Amendment has passed on a 16-4 vote. Any other discussion on 16-14, Friedland, Feehan, sorry. Any other discussion? So now we have Supervisor Geary.
So anybody that has a on-premise sign currently that is larger than allowed in the ordinance, they're just going to be non-conforming. And if for some reason that sign gets damaged, then they have to get smaller and get back to conforming. If you already have a business, you already have a sign that's bigger than what we allow, then you're just non-conforming, right?
Charlie.
Is that my understanding?
Mr. Handy.
That is an accurate assessment.
Okay, and then if it got destroyed or something, then they have to bring it down to a smaller size that meets this requirement.
If it's more than the 50%.
No, that's what we just did, isn't it? So we have the ordinance right now has 6 amendments on its first reading. The 3 that came that were Pedretti amendments, Ebert's amendment, 2 Friedland amendments. Supervisor Doyle.
I have a question for Corp Counsel. Does PRD have any ability to look at this over the next 30 days? I voted against my amendment. I wanted to make sure that it read properly. I didn't agree with what she was trying to accomplish, but I wanted to make sure that it legally was proper.
Yeah.
Because I have a problem. I mean, that's why I asked Mr. Feehan to mention about that Quick Trip sign on OT. I don't think people in that neighborhood are offended by that sign, and we have now just made that a non-conforming sign by this. I would like PRD to have the ability to look at these things over the next 30 days and say, maybe we do have some issues here. Now, maybe it's not binding. Can they put it on their agenda where they offer an amendment? I mean, do they have the ability to do that?
Yes.
Okay, and I would hope that they do, because I think that people would come to the conclusion that we may have just made a mistake here.
You're shaking. Supervisor Friedland.
May I ask Mr. Handy if that Quick Trip sign is conforming right now?
That amendment isn't what took it out of conformance. It would be out of conformance with the ordinance as drafted prior to that amendment. The question that was asked of me was, would that be out of it would be non-compliant. But for a couple of reasons, it'd be non-compliant, not just because of that amendment.
Supervisor Weers.
Thank you. I'm hoping this is on the whole ordinance. I can speak on the whole ordinance. Okay. First of all, with all due respect to other supervisors and
wait,
your time.
Time out. My recollection is that we passed the Doyle Amendment to the Friedland Amendment. We still have to vote on the amended second Friedland Amendment. So my apologies.
So no.
Did we do that?
Yeah, we did that.
Some are saying yes, some are saying no. The clerk is saying no.
The Doyle one was the Friedland.
We voted.
But that was to change the wording of it. Okay. So now we have to vote on the revised Friedland 2 amendment. So we voted to change the wording, to correct the wording, and now we are debating the corrected version of Supervisor Friedland's second amendment. So discussion on that. No discussion on that. Okay.
I would like to read it.
Oh, we could certainly read the amendment that we'll be voting on the computer as soon as we're done reading, so get ready. And it reads, so this is in 33.04, paren 9, paren B, point 3, following the current, I'm sorry, we need to say, may not be located within 300 feet, oh, I'm sorry, we already made that amendment, my apologies, may not be located within 400 feet of a residential or public district line if 40 square feet or larger, may not be located within 500 feet of a residential or public district line if 100 square feet. So on that amended amendment on the computer. I'm going to get the coming. Supervisor Geary, Supervisor Paff, we're waiting on votes. The amendment fails on a tie vote, 15-15.
Did we gain a vote somehow?
So now we are on the on the ordinance as 5 times amended, the 3 Pedretti amendments, the 1 Ebert amendment, and the 1st Friedland amendment.
Just first reading.
Yeah, so I don't know. No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to vote. Discussion. If I said vote, I apologize. Discussion. Supervisor Feehan. I'm sorry, Supervisor Weers, because she had the floor before I went. Sorry.
Thank you. With all due respect to everyone's time here, I know that we're spending a lot of time on this, and this is what I'm going to say is solely commentary for future reference. And so I appreciate your patience, because we have spent 8 months of hours and hours and hours, and I'm sorry that it's past 9 o'clock, but it's very important, and I'm really passionate about this, so I would like to make my statement quick here. With the utmost respect for the work, thought, energy, and time that so many people, especially Supervisor Friedland and the people helping her, have put into forming the outdoor advertising ordinance, I have to express my disappointment in the process that was used for getting to where we are today. It seems to me that this process, where the PR&D committee took up the task of rolling two very competing sign regulation ordinance proposals into one PRD proposed ordinance could have been a more inclusive and better process for everyone. For those of you who were not lucky enough to attend these lengthy and interesting meetings, I can assure you that those on the committee who have never owned a sign, promoted a business on a sign, built a sign, or had an imposing sign out our home window, that this was a task that was quite the learning experience for all of us. In the beginning of this process, the idea was proposed to form a subcommittee of the committee members, people who are most passionate and knowledgeable on the subject of off-premise and on-premise signs, experts in the industry, basically the people who are and will be most affected by this ordinance. That subcommittee could have regularly sat down with each other face-to-face, moderated by our knowledgeable staff, to debate the many issues and details of a very technical sign ordinance. This process would have been valuable, I believe, because it invites the involvement of those in this community who are most knowledgeable in a very technical area, those on both sides of this issue. The end result of the process not taken may not have been much different from where we are now. After this meeting, I'm rethinking that. But I believe inclusion of those most affected by legislation should certainly not be feared, and in fact should be embraced and utilized whenever available to us as a governing body. I'll support the draft of this ordinance, and I think it is well written, and the leeway that's given with the option of variances is undoubtedly my favorite part of the ordinance, because I know that we can't perfect it in one draft. But I believe firmly that including experts and those passionate on the other side could have alleviated this last-minute debate we are seeing now. Other than that, I support this, and I thoroughly want to thank everyone on the PRD committee and Ms. Friedland, Dan Ferries, Olympus, all these people for all the work. And it was a ton of work, but you're seeing now the technical aspects of this ordinance that none of us are. We don't work with this stuff every day. We don't work with sign sizes and distances from RPAs and that kind of thing. I would have liked to be involved in the process, but I think including the community and those knowledgeable in the area would have been a beneficial area that we can work on in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Weers. Again, discussion at this first reading of the amended ordinance. Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was there the night that we had the three-hour public hearing, and I understand the concerns of the people who don't like the LED billboards. And this is a new technology, and it's justifiable that this county government should review ordinances relating to LED signs. And I also think that it's advisable that we would seek public opinion on this. Recently, the La Crosse Common Council voted for a referendum to get public input about this very subject. And I think that echoing, I believe, what Supervisor Weers is saying, is that I'm not confident that we've had adequate public input regarding these sign ordinances. The people that I talk to in the community are very much aware of the LED sign portion of this ordinance, but almost none of them are aware of the really dramatic changes that would be made to on-premise signs. And I do not feel that that is a positive change. It seems to me that this ordinance concerning on-premise signs is very restrictive relative to the current ordinances. At the meeting, there were many people that got up and said, I'm not anti-business. Almost every one of them said, I'm not anti-business. Well, I can tell you, when I was younger, my dad told me, if they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. And this ordinance is anti-business. And when we think about economic activity in our community, whether it's billboards or other on-premise signs, the business owners that have spent large amounts of money investing in those signs do it with a lot of thought. And it generates jobs. It generates jobs for the people that build the signs. It generates jobs for the people that service the signs. It makes jobs for the people that sell advertising on the signs. it creates business for the businesses that advertise on the sign, which creates more jobs and more tax revenue that runs our city and county government. And those that support this ordinance say that it does not impact on local municipalities and townships if they choose to write their own ordinance, and that's true. I believe, as Supervisor Ebert said earlier, many of the municipalities and townships in La Crosse County will probably choose to rewrite these ordinances, and I've heard from some of them on that. I think that there's a lack of input, a lack of involvement from the business community on this. I spent time with La Crosse Sign Company, representatives of Quick Trip, and the people at Olympus, and I do not believe that this is a good ordinance, and I will be voting against it.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to add on to Supervisor Weir's comments. I think the towns were left out of the process. Back in 2008, they negotiated with the staff, and I think they came up with quite an equitable agreement. But when this, all of a sudden in the last year, the towns were ignored, and that's who it affects, is town governments. I think that maybe they should have used the same as with the assessor study that we did, is appoint some town members, town board members, and some county board members to negotiate this in an ad hoc committee. Again, the towns are partners in this, and for the folks that say, well, they could have their public input by going to a public meeting, I think degrades the towns as a partner. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one quick question, and it's not a technical one. It's for Mr. O'Malley. We got an awful lot of specific statistics in this ordinance now. What do you expect, and what do you envision as to hiring people to monitor this? How much time is this going to take? What's the cost going to be? That's going to be the bottom line on this thing also. And we have to hire one, two people. I just don't know where you're going.
It's my expectation that the department is sufficiently staffed. We've filled a vacant position that had been vacant for some time. I discussed this with the previous director. Obviously, I don't have a perfect crystal ball. We'll evaluate it as it goes ahead, but that's my take on it after discussing it with the director, and it was part of my evaluation of allowing them to fill that vacant position.
Okay, good.
Supervisor Ferries, on discussion on this first reading of the amended ordinance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the last three gentlemen that spoke. I've said this all along, that I felt that this was anti-business. Whenever you're limiting their ability to get out and sell their wares, it's not good for the community. It drives away businesses. It's, instead of bringing people to town, bringing business, bringing a tax base, it just works against everything that I have thought of what a community should be about. And interesting facts, I think we've got a double standard going, I think, because what I heard so far is the business community needs to listen to the public, and that's true. They have to concede, listen to the residents of what they're wanting. All right, let's keep that in mind on that last topic on our agenda tonight, when we're going to ask to do a study that's going to displace a lot of people on the north side, elderly people. So I'm just saying, are we going to use a double standard here? To promote business, to displace people. That's all I got to say.
Supervisor Karen Johnson.
I just had a really quick question. Olympus proposed an amendment to make it 7.5 seconds on an off-premise sign instead of 8, and I just wanted to hear from someone on the committee. I realized that it was passed unanimously. It was a half second. Just wondering why it was a half second change.
Charlie.
60 seconds is divided easily by 7.5. It's not divided easily by 8. 7.5 goes to 15, goes to 30, goes to 60 seconds. So it makes it easier for them to determine sales of ads. That's why 7.5 seconds was used. It's purely math.
Okay. Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to respectfully disagree with those of us here tonight who feel that wanting to preserve the quality of life for people and put some reasonable limits on billboard proliferation is somehow anti-business. I think we're engaging in some hyperbole here to suggest that billboards drive business, and without them, business will come to a grinding halt. I just returned from Germany and made a very special point of observing what the billboard situation is there. And while there are any number of billboards in cities, there are no billboards in the countryside in Germany, no permanent billboards. There are some small movable boards that I've seen that are not lit up. Germans have decided that they want to preserve the countryside for everyone and that they don't want to have billboards, you know, distracting from the natural beauty of the countryside. And somehow business goes on there. So I don't think that, you know, necessarily limiting billboards is going to destroy business.
I have two other speakers. Super, for the first reading of the amended ordinance, Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've talked, the word business has shown up over and over and over in the conversation this evening. And I would like to point out that the residents of the county also contribute to the business environment of the county. Not only do they pay taxes, often proportionately more taxes than we earn from the location of the signs. I know that's the case certainly in the city of La Crosse. But they too have spoken, and they too need to be heard and will continue to be heard by us. But I think we just, when you stop and you think, if somebody's going to build a home and they're going to live here, they're going to create an environment for the builders, the plumbers, all of the people that go into building the homes. Who does the shopping in the businesses, whether you're talking about grocery stores, Quick Trips, or anywhere else? So I think we just need to keep it in proportion and in perspective, that this is something that we're talking about, the total environment to our community. And both sides need to be appreciated and recognized, but not one side more than the other. Thank you.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just got a clarification from Dave. The mention was that townships can opt out of this by drafting their own sign ordinance, and if they draft a sign ordinance, that would supersede our ordinance, which means ours would be in effect in that township. Is that correct? And is there any timeline, like after we adopt ours, do they have a year to do it, or they could do it 2 years from now or 3 years from now?
Not a timeline.
Okay, so if a business was turned down by the county, then their other alternative would be to try to talk the township into changing their sign ordinance, and then they would be, if they could do that, then they would be in compliance. I like the idea of uniformity throughout the county. I don't want some areas to be viewed as, easier to do what they, you know, want to do. But there is no timeline on it. They can opt out anytime they want, and a year? Or no time. Okay, that's all I need.
Mr. Lang, thank you for the brevity of your answers. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In making decisions and looking back at decisions made, some can be proud of what they do, and some can be proud of what they don't do. And just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it or ought to do it. And I think what we are experiencing is that without guidelines, the larger environment is not always taken into consideration. So that's what I think we are doing now. We are providing guidelines so that we could be good neighbors, business and community, residents and consumers. Thank you.
Supervisor Friedland has the floor.
Thank you. I respect what Supervisor Tina Weir said.
It was a difficult process. What's the expression that making laws is like sausage or something? It's difficult, and it was hard to come up with a procedure, and it wasn't perfect. So I can thank her for what she said. There was no lack of involvement, though, as Supervisor Feehan said, that the sign companies weren't involved in this. The sign companies were involved in this. They tended to sort of drift in and out, or the on-premise sign companies tended to sort of drift in and out and maybe take some things for granted and not, in my opinion, stay on their toes. But they were on all the email lists. They were always invited. They always had notice. I always called them to ask them questions. I called for meetings. I called to bring them in. And I went to the chamber twice. I went to the tourist division. I spoke to businesses. We did everything we possibly could to keep all of the companies as involved as possible. So I don't think the process, as it turned out, was unfair or one-sided. And the last thing that I want to say is that a lot of the ordinance was patterned after what Charlie Handy did with the towns. The EMU portions were different, and that's because in his version, the 2001 ordinance was very scant on electric signs. It had 8 lines total on electronic signs. Incidentally, Mr. Ebert, that under that ordinance, the hold time would have been 6 seconds, so we only increased it to 2 seconds from that. And it had a 64-square-foot size limit for signs anywhere. So we actually went down on almost all of the roads. We made it actually less strict than Mr. Handy's proposal originally. And on the non-electronic port, we had to get ahead of the ball on the electronic portions. Otherwise, we'd have the same situation as on Highway 16, where there were no regulations, and we couldn't do anything after the fact. So we should be very proud that we're getting ahead on electronic portions right now. And also on just the regular business signs, this ordinance picked up a lot of what was in Mr. Handy's ordinance. So if the towns write their own and they look at what was before we got involved in this latest process, they'll see that that's actually very, very similar. And in some ways, again, what we have done gives the companies more. Under Mr. Handy's proposal, for example, there would be only 300 square foot size billboards. That's the single face. We have increased this to 672 feet on the interstate and on Highway 53. So in some ways, this is more generous to business than it was under the old code. And I thank the committee very much for its work, its hard work, and took a lot. Thank you very much.
So remember, this will be on our agenda next month for its second and hopefully final reading. And I'm going to ask, since we are in such a good mood, unanimous consent to move to item 118. Seeing no objection, I'm going to call on Supervisor Burke for that one item to be taken out of order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a substitute amendment you have on your desk. To the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the approved funding share for conceptual alternative study of I-90 interchange at Exit 3, whereas a group of area business leaders, including representatives of the City of La Crosse Northside Business Association, presented their hopes for a study of options to realign the Exit 3 interchange at I-90 to accommodate greater economic development of the waterfront entrance to the cities of La Crosse and Onalaska, and whereas the La Crosse Area Planning Committee has made a request to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation to delay the U.S. Highway 53 I-90 State Highway 35 Interchange Project Exit 3 to assess the options for economic development throughout the corridor. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve up to $5,000 toward the conceptual alternative study of the I-90 interchange at Exit 3, contingent upon approval of the funding shares among the parties. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair is authorized to approve the work order and sign any necessary documents to accomplish the purposes of this resolution after approval by the Corporation Council. Fiscal note, the total cost to La Crosse County for the study will be $5,000 from Org 1061-71061, Business and Industry Promotion, plus in-kind staff time to support the process. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Paff. Discussion. Supervisor Sobranek.
I'm not here for my personal agenda. I'm here to represent my constituents, and of all the phone calls I received on this, 100% of them were against funding for this project. I tried to explain to them that this is not going to occur again for the next 50, 60 years, which they all thought was just wonderful because nobody's going to get displaced for the next 50, 60 years is what they told me. So I am going to do what my constituents asked me to do, and I'm going to vote no on this.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a procedural question. Since the original 118 was signed by both committee members and passed by a vast majority in both committees, this substitute one with the corrections is okay?
Mr. Lang.
I think it is because the resolved is the same and the amount the county is. I mean, technically we could say vote to amend it, but it's really the resolved is the same that was voted on, so I think it's okay.
Okay, and the reason it's changed is because the cost went from $50,000 to $49,000, and because the city of Onalaska didn't choose to.
So right. The LAPC amount changed and the city of Onalaska amount changed.
But nothing that the county.
And those are all just
in
the whereas clauses.
Okay, thank you very much.
Supervisor Bina.
I just have one question in regards to it. Not necessarily the funding for the investigation, but what happens if and when they come up with a design. We did this 21 years ago at Rockland. Rockland wanted a on and off ramp. Once we found out that before the design started that the county would be responsible for picking up $2 million of the ramp to go in, the village would be responsible for $1 million. My question is, once we get a plan, how much is it going to cost the county to put into the design?
Supervisor Bina, we have no idea. The spending of county money towards a study.
I agree with that.
We have no way of knowing what the study will tell us until the study is completed.
I think we need to look beyond, and if it's going to cost us $2 to $5 million to help the feds and the state put the interchange in, we should know about that pretty quick, and that wouldn't be hard to find out because that's what happened at Rockland.
Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would urge everyone to approve this funding. It's $5,000. It is a gateway to the city of La Crosse, and we've heard all the comments, and Supervisor Ferris said it's going to displace people. We don't know that. And for him to make that statement is untrue. We have no idea what's going to happen with the study. We hope to have an answer in the middle of March, and everyone that wants to be will be invited to that meeting in the middle of March, and I urge everyone to approve this tonight. It is a study. We need to know some facts first, so what could happen, how it could change for the better, and looking forward for the next 50 to 100 years, how to improve the city of La Crosse's entrance to our city. Thank you.
Supervisor Mock is next. I'm going to caution supervisors that you are careful with your words, especially when referring to another supervisor, please. Supervisor Mock.
The interchange is going to go in no matter what. I mean, the expenses for the getting on and off, it's going to happen so there's going to be a certain expense for that no matter what. If the study would show that it would be worth doing more, it's going to take a little longer for that interchange to be finished. I think it might delay it a couple years. But the costs, there's a certain amount of costs that are going to happen no matter whether anything different is done or not. So that's what we know for sure.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can appreciate Supervisor Richmond's remarks, but it was stated several times that it would probably displace some of the oldest community residents up there. It was stated several times, along with our administrator's remarks about if any one of the four districts or entities involved would turn it down, it would be dead in the water. I heard that three times. Unalaska turned it down, and it wasn't with no intent of to La Crosse. We just don't own one foot in this project. If we did, it would have been looked at probably differently. But our intent wasn't to try to persuade people not to. It's just we didn't have any land in this project. And along with what Alderman Sobranek said, I had two people that said I made a mistake, and I had 25 that said, good for you. So along with a lot of residents on the upper end of the north side that from that evening I heard had concerns about this project. So we listened to our constituents up there. Thank you.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that, I came home from Milwaukee yesterday, and I got off an exit 3, and there's a fork in the road there. One section goes down Alaska, and one section goes to La Crosse, and I just still think that road goes north and south and kind of ties us together. So I think the money is worth spending, and I'll call the question.
There are two speakers who had their hands raised prior to the question being called as we vote on whether or not to end debate, which has been moved by Supervisor Mettinger and seconded by, maybe not, Supervisor Geary. So on the vote is, or the motion is to end debate. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are Ebert, Ferries, Weirs, Pedretti, Friedland, Burns. That motion passes. Debate is ended on the computer on Resolution 1-18. The resolution is approved, 23 ayes, 6 noes, 1 abstention. Back to the next item on our agenda. So,
Chair, point of order, this was the first time that we not let everyone speak once. Will this be the new policy then?
That's the pleasure of the group when we... I made it clear that there were two speakers left to be heard, and the body decided to vote to close debate. So we are back to you, Supervisor Meyer, I believe, on item 1-8.
Thank you. Item 1-8, zoning petition number 1880 to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Dennis Hatz, including acting on behalf of Joyce Hatz and on behalf of Todd A. and Michael L. Paulus to rezone Partial A from Agriculture District A to Exclusive Agriculture District and to rezone Partial B from B and C to Exclusive Agriculture District A in the town of Bangor. This passed unanimously with no conditions. I move for your approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Bean. A discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Back to you, Mr. Meyer.
Item 1-9, conditional use permit number 849, filed by Roger A. and Joanna G. Henderson to amend existing conditions. Existing conditional use permit number 526 to operate a small retail business along with an insurance business on land zone exclusive agriculture district in the town of Hamilton. This was approved unanimously with 12 conditions. I move for your approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously as well.
Item 1-10, conditional use permit number 850, filed by Teresa M. Bagneski and Jim Whittaker to operate a mobile food sales business known as Big Mama's Gyro on land zone residential A in the town of Shelby. This was approved unanimously with 6 conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item 1-11.
I apologize. That's my mistake, Supervisor Kyle. I thought you were seconding it.
To be able to clean his trailer, not to operate a business out of there.
So it was read into the record.
Nate, you still here?
Yeah.
You can explain it.
Well,
wait until you get to the mic, please. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm new. Actually, it only allows him to operate those business, the business in conformity with those conditions that are listed. That states cleaning, maintenance, and repair on the trailer can be done. It does not allow the property owner to vend or sell food out of his business or out of that property.
It was just a tiny little mistake in the reading of it. So it is the committee report that was approved. So thank you for the clarification, Supervisor Kyle. Back to you, Supervisor Meyer.
Item 1-11, zoning petition number 1881 to amend La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Howard L. and Susan K. Larson to rezone exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Burns. This is approved unanimously with no conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item 1-12, conditional use permit number 851, filed by Jeffrey W. Stingle to operate a boat and motor, blind installation and boat motor maintenance shop, known as Mainstream Firearms and Marine, on 0.82 acres of land zoned residential District A in the town of Campbell. This was approved unanimously with the 9 conditions listed. I move for your approval.
Supervisor Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Discussion. All those in favor signify. Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Why is he calling his business a firearms business? Is he looking to operate the sale of guns and things also?
Mr. Sampson, can you answer, please?
No. The conditions allow him to, specifically for the operation of a boat and motor, an accessory shop with maintenance. It does not include firearm sales.
Because that would require additional licensing, wouldn't it?
That's correct, through the ATF, I believe.
So it's just a name that he likes for the business?
Yes, and he owns a business in Winona, Minnesota. This would be a staging area for boats that he sells to buyers in La Crosse.
Any other discussion?
Thank you.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved. Is that it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it. Thank you.
Job well done this evening. Thank you. On to you, Supervisor Spiker, Public Works and Infrastructure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supporting Assembly Bill 454, Performance of Highway Improvement Projects by County Highway Department for another county or municipality. It was approved by the Legislative Committee, and it was approved by the Public Works Committee unanimously. And I use the rules of the board to read first, whereas, now therefore be resolved in a fiscal note, unless somebody has objection to it.
Read on.
Whereas under 2011 Biennial Budget Act, Act 32, a county is generally prohibited from using its own workforce to perform a highway improvement project on a highway under the jurisdiction of another county or municipality that is located in a different county. Now, therefore, it be resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby go on record supporting Assembly Bill 454 to limit prohibitions enacted by Act 32 in order to permit Wisconsin counties to perform work for each other and municipalities in the most cost-effective manner possible. Fiscal note, if the prohibitions are not eliminated, the cost for painting and striping will likely double to $20,000 per year, and up to additional $300,000 worth of equipment will need to be purchased that was formerly rented from other counties. I move for approval.
Moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Paff. Discussion. Supervisor Spiker.
I'd like to now thank Mr. Doyle, county board member or state assemblyman, whichever title he has, for he's part of this resolution, and it's something that was in error done in the budget, and hopefully we can get it changed. And I want to congratulate him and other supervisors, and in my understanding, both sides of the aisle, which is unbelievable. Thank you.
Other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Spiker? Supervisor Burke, Executive Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Second reading of the second consideration of ordinance number 101 to create section 30.81, parent 11 of chapter 30 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin regarding slow no-wake zones. I move for its approval.
It's been moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That ordinance is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Item 1-15 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the to acknowledge the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County: William A. Shepherd, Corporation Counsel, 37 plus years; Jeffrey H. Blusky, Zoning Planning and Land Information, 36 plus; Ronald D. Berg, Health Department, 34 plus; Nancy M. Lubinsky, Emergency Services, 33 plus; Anita M. Moe, Lakeview Health Center, 26 plus; Dale J. Sutherland, Highway Department, 24 plus; Judith A. Jameson, Library Administration Center, 23 plus; Stephen P. Lenzer, Health Department, 22 plus; Cheryl M. Hickey, Human Services Department, 22 plus. Whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings, and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude, dated this 19th day of January 2012. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Cruz. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Item 1-16 to the honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the Deputy Medical Examiner compensation. Whereas the medical examiner is authorized by action of the county board to appoint deputies subject to the judiciary and law enforcement committee's approval to assist with the duties of county medical examiner. Whereas deputy medical examiners continue to be needed due to the volume of work, and it is necessary and desirable to pay deputies as county employees on-call pay. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the on-call pay for duly appointed deputy medical examiners when assigned to be on-call be increased to an amount of $2 per hour, effective January 23, 2012. Be it further resolved that the finance and personnel departments are authorized and directed to take such action necessary to carry out the intent of this resolution. Fiscal note, the estimated increase in cost is expected to be less than $3,250 wage per year to the medical examiner's office, and revenues have greatly increased in amounts sufficient to cover this expense. There are currently 5 deputy medical examiners eligible for on-call pay. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Karen Johnson. This will be a vote on the computer, just so everybody knows, because it requires a two-thirds vote of the full county board. Discussion, Supervisor Doyle.
Just a quick question as to why this is coming at mid-year as opposed to as part of the budget.
Apologize, it was a miscommunication between the medical examiner and myself, but he has sufficient revenue to cover this. It's the same rate that a social worker receives for on-call, so I do recommend it.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? On the computer, on resolution 116. Resolution is approved on a 29-0 vote. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Item 1-17 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, creating an economic support supervisor position in La Crosse County for the Western Region for Economic Assistance Income Maintenance Consortium. Whereas La Crosse County is the administrative lead county in the Western Region for Economic Assistance Partnership that includes eight counties which administer income maintenance programs on a regional basis. And whereas, although WREA includes eight partner counties, WREA operates under a single state-county contract between La Crosse County and the State Department of Health Services, a unified budget, and a unified management supervisory structure. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors authorize the creation of one full-time equivalent economics support supervisor position effective immediately, and authorize the Finance Department to make any appropriate account transfers necessary related to the funding of this position. Fiscal note, there is no impact on the county tax levy. ES Supervisor, salary $44,948, fringe $26,460. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is approved. Is that it for you, Supervisor Burke?
Yes, Madam Chair.
We made
Chair.
It through. Thank you. Any suggestions for future agenda items? Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was getting worried. I was going to miss last call.
You and Supervisor Mettinger both.
Mr. O'Malley, my parting shot tonight has nothing to do with you, so don't read anything into this. You know, some people are like slinkies, not really good at anything, but you know you can't help but chuckle when you see one tumble down the stairs.
Is that a motion to adjourn, Supervisor Sobranek? It's been moved by Supervisor Sobranek, seconded by Supervisor Benrud. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. With the thanks of the board for your patience, we are adjourned.